Call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present.
Thank you. There is no addendum this evening. Few announcements. I'm pleased to state that for the second year in a row, the town of Fort Erie has been the recipient of a community design award for architectural excellence in Niagara. Last year it was the Ridgeway Town Center. This year it was the John Brandt Elementary School. And in fact, Fort Erie received two urban design awards for that school, as did the school board, which actually built the facility. The first award was for large architecture and signified that the elementary school is the best example of large architecture in the Niagara region for 2016. The second award was the Overall Excellence Award, which is not given annually, but it was given this year, again, to the John Brandt School because of the design and the site plan work, how they fit into the neighborhood and the criteria for the second selection. While the school was designed by the architect, the site plan was a collaborative exercise involving the town planning staff. So I want to congratulate on behalf of council not only the Niagara South, District School Board of Niagara, but also our town planning staff. The development is an excellent example of the town and the school board working together ultimately to accomplish what organizations working collaboratively can do that they can't otherwise do acting individually. And you'll see above me some examples of the school outside and inside, as well as the awards that were received. The second thing I'd like to mention is that this week, tomorrow evening, the town will be receiving another award. We'll be receiving recognition from Habitat for Humanity for the contributions that the town of Fort Erie has made over the years to its efforts to expand affordable housing in the town of Fort Erie. That will take place in St. Catharines and will take place immediately following the Chamber of Commerce Economic Development Corporation State of Fort Erie presentation, which is scheduled tomorrow for the Italo-Canadian Hall between 3:30 and 6. And my understanding is that this year the mayor will be actually given more time to speak than the general manager of the Economic Development Corporation. And then finally, I want to mention that yesterday I was invited to attend a viewing of a documentary called It's About Me. And this was shown at the Bell Tower in Fort Erie on Central Avenue. The documentary was produced by an individual named Antoine Gaber, who is an artist. He's actually a cancer research scientist who got into art, I guess somewhat as a deviation. Not only does painting, but decided to do some movie work and put together a rather interesting and sobering documentary relative to the generations between 1925 and the most recent generation Z. And between X, Y, and Z, they're classified as the me generation. Very interesting and thought-provoking documentary in that it identified what each of the various generations has been known for, really highlighted the significant shift in, I think, personal philosophy between the what was called the silent generation, that is the generation of individuals born between 1925 and 44, many of whom participated in the Second World War, most of whom lived through the Depression, and how they had a much greater understanding of what their obligations were to community, as opposed to successive generations and the changes that have taken place. And it particularly highlighted the challenges faced by the most recent generation, and also the challenges faced by employers and educators and individuals who deal with the most current generation. Some generalities, but by and large, very thought-provoking. So if you have an opportunity at any time, if it's shown again in Fort Erie, the name of the documentary, It's About Me, and it's produced by Antoine Gaber, who will be holding a art mentoring program in Fort Erie. You may have seen something in the newspaper about that. He's selected 20 artists here. He's had applications from Vancouver and Quebec, but he's elected 20, and he will be doing some work with them over the next 2 months. So that's it for the announcements. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? Madam Clerk, I indicated that I have a pecuniary interest that I'd like to declare with respect to report PBS 20-2017, but it's really only the third recommendation, and that's the recommendation relative to the Ridge Park that deals with the Lions, Ridgeway Lions Club. So when we get to that, Madam Clerk, I will be asking that those three items be dealt with separately so that I can deal with the report in general, but not the specific recommendation regarding the storage facility. If there are no other disclosures of pecuniary interest, there are no public notices of upcoming meetings. There are no public meetings this evening. There is a consent agenda, and I would ask that report 15-06-2017, which is the adoption of the transit route report, be taken out of the consent agenda for discussion later on. Are there any other reports that anyone wishes to have removed from the consent agenda package? If not, can I have a motion for the consent agenda to be moved? Councillor McDermott. So the consent agenda package as it exists is on the floor for any questions or comments. So if there are none, I've got a couple. The first one relates to the IS-10, which is the Bridgeburg Wastewater Servicing Strategy. And I noticed that there's a reference to start planning for to do the municipal, the MCEA. What is that, Mr. Cuckett? MCEA, the Municipal Class Environmental Assessment. And also, I think that it's important that we should be looking towards determining what the funding sources will be with respect to the works that have been identified. And can you comment on that, Mr. Cuckett?
Sure, to you, Your Worship. We will be looking at funding sources, be it provincial, federal, and the regional level, any funding that may be out there through grant programs. And in discussion with the region as well, they play a big part in the benefits of this, so we will be looking at them as well, hopefully to cost share on this. And hopefully the development developers that will seek benefit from the servicing as well, looking at them for some contribution as well.
And that would that be through development charges or some other mechanisms?
Through other mechanisms.
And then I also noted that one of the options, and I believe it's the recommended option, suggests that a trunk sewer main should run down Arcadia. And once it hits once that would hit the Queen Elizabeth Highway, or before it hits the Queen Elizabeth Highway, is there some indication as to where that trunk main would go in order to hook up with the Douglastown
To you, Your Worship, the study did not address the lagoons and servicing or retiring those lagoons. We spoke to the region, had lengthy conversations, and there is no appetite from them to change or alter the lagoons. They would like to see them operate as they do. So this study did not incorporate the lagoons and give them relief.
So that would be the subject of future studies if and when we get to that point.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Mr. Jansen, were there any questions arising out of that? Mr. Jansen, with respect to report CS05-2017, I noticed that the bond returns weren't particularly good in 2000. And is there any contemplation of whether we should change strategies with respect to investing in those bonds, or is this just a normal market experience?
Those bond portfolios with the one program are administered on behalf of a pooling of municipalities in Ontario, and those we would be holding for the long term, so we would have confidence that over the greater term or longer term that they would perform better.
Thank you. I have no other questions. Does anyone else? Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. I wondered if, I don't have any questions. I just wanted to make a comment with respect to report number CS-07-2017 as it relates to the statement of remuneration and expenses combined. And just wanted to remind the public that the expenses that are incurred by some members of council is actually expenses that that has to be paid out for council members to represent the community at large at different functions and conferences so that we can bring the best possible outcome for our municipality.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Anyone else? If not, then I'll call the question with respect to the consent agenda as amended. All those in favor? Unopposed? That is carried. That then would take us to item IS-06-2017. Can I have a mover for that? Any questions or comments? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you, I guess, to Mr. Walsh. I have a few questions with respect to this particular report, but more so on the report that comes later on during infrastructure. Just wanted to ask, where are we with the transit committee at this point?
We have, maybe the clerk can help me out here. We've received applications and a report is coming forth. Want to take this question, please?
Certainly. Mr. Walsh, through you to the councillor, I believe we are scheduling the choosing of the committee members in that have responded to the application call at the next council meeting of March 27th.
Thank you. This is my feeling, and I don't know what the other councillors, how the other councillors feel, but I really believe that part of this plan, these phases, should be vetted through the committee as well once it's been established. I don't know that that we should be accepting this at this point. That's my own personal opinion. But I do have further questions with respect to what's in the report. For example, the flag stops. There is mention when we first met in the group sessions that flag stops from Ridge Road through to Rose Hill would still continue on Dominion Road. Is that still the case?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, partially correct. In the built-up urban areas, there'll be formal bus stops, but once we get into the more rural areas, it will remain as a flag stop system for now.
Thank you. And I know what street furniture is, but just for the general public, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the intent there with that terminology is street benches or bus benches and the overhangs for protection?
Street furniture also includes shelters, as you know, benches, trash receptacles, etc.
Okay, thanks. And on page 4 of page 7 of the report, I'm a bit confused and hoping that you could clarify that with respect to the Phase 3 plan provided for Council's approval was proposed within the 2017 capital budget. And a total of $60,000 is being recommended to be brought forward to Bus 17 project. Could you just explain that a bit for me, please?
We currently have three bus projects, Bus 15, Bus 16, and Bus 17. This is simply a consolidation of the remaining funds in Bus 15 and Bus 16 into Bus 17 so that when we roll everything forward, it's a little more simpler for our finance department to administer.
Okay, thank you. And on Appendix 1, page 2, there is allocation with respect to the 377 and the 149 for public transit infrastructure funds. That's a little less than half than what the budget is proposed to be. But it talks about stop posts and signage, and as I was going through the report, it was talking about the pricing that's associated with the different types that they would be looking at. One would be for $50, and I'm just wondering, is that a decal that would be placed on a pole?
Through you again, Mr. Mayor, essentially yes.
And then the U-bar, I'm a little confused. There weren't any pictures associated with that, so could
that's,
you...
That's the post itself. No, it the shape of it, if you're looking down on it, is U-shaped. That's what they're called.
Okay, thank you. And if I may?
Yes, please do.
I wanted just to get some clarification with respect to AODA and the accessibility for individuals who either are confined to wheelchairs or have sight vision problems. I wasn't clear as to whether or not all of the stops would have accessibility units or just some of the stops.
For you, Mr. Mayor, our goal is to make every stop AOD compliant. So I guess the short answer is yes.
Thank you. And one final question, if I may, Your Worship.
Yes.
That final question is with respect to, with respect to financials and costs related to the shelters, there's an estimation of $6,500 per, which you're estimating would come to about $95,000 or $97,500 for a total of 15 shelters. And I'm assuming that that hasn't gone to market. You're just getting a best guess from what's in the marketplace now, but has there been any consideration to approaching any local manufacturing companies or people that do build them on the side to get a cheaper price?
Mr. Walsh?
The process of obtaining them will be done through a public tender. So certainly if we have qualified constructors locally and they're the low tenderer, they'll be successful in their bid.
Thank you. And my final question is with respect to the mapping for the Stevensville area. And I'm a little concerned. My concern is that you have an initial run through the main artery of Stevensville, but then your return, and correct me if I'm wrong, is going through the QEW. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what was proposed in phase one, phase two of the study presented back in October, I believe. The Transit Consulting Network was here.
Okay, and I have a follow-up question. Were there any other routes that were discussed other than having to go back on the QEW? Because I would think that that would be inappropriate.
Well, right through you, Mr. Mayor, right now we're trying to stick to a timetable such that these buses would link up with the other two routes at the future transit hub at the municipal campus here all at the same time. So there's a minimal amount of waiting. The vendor has not run these routes before. There may be an opportunity to make it more of a local run. But I believe it's imperative that we have a minimal wait time. When we're in the non-peak hours, the buses will run only once per hour. So if you miss your connection, we're now looking at an hour standing there, and I don't find that acceptable for our patrons.
Mr. Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. I just have a follow-up to that. While I agree people shouldn't have to wait, we were initially in the focus group discussing the fact that there wouldn't be one circular run, which would be 2 hours to get from one distance to the next distance, that there would be then, if we were having three buses, two separate routes, north, south, or north, and so the Jarvis area, and then the Ridgeway area, and then one meeting at a hub to be dedicated to the Stevensville run so that people wouldn't be spending 2 hours of their time to get from Ridgeway down to Jarvis Street. Because I had sat on that route and was really annoyed at the fact that it took me 2 hours to get to one point. So where do we stand on that?
Mr. Walsh?
Phase one and two of the route study did propose three different routes, each of which I believe is a half an hour out and a half an hour back. So the routes are 1 hour total, but it would be, assuming you're only going one way, half hour travel time.
Councillor Butler?
That's it. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Well, I've got a number of questions and maybe some comments as well, so perhaps I could hand this chair over to somebody.
I accept.
Thank you. I have to say that I've got a number of reservations with respect to the report. I'm probably like all the members of council committed to public transit in this community because I believe that it's come to the conclusion that it's part of how you grow and prosper as a community. I thought that there might be a bit more analysis with respect to the report, so I asked a number of questions and I've circulated those questions to you late today, so some of you may not even have had a chance to look. With some of the responses that I received from staff, and some of them make sense. I must say that when I read the second report on our agenda this evening, which is the one dealing with the extension of the contract, there was information in that report that I thought should have been in the first report, which would have helped me in terms of the routes and the route configuration. But I did still have concerns about the efficacy of the routes that have been identified. And I also, after having read the report, was of the impression that perhaps there had been some further public consultation after we received the report last fall in October with respect to these routes. And the answer that I received today indicated that no, that actually hadn't taken place. There have been some modifications to some of these, but Councillor Butler has actually hit on a number of the points that I think are of concern to me, and particularly the way that we've got the service sent out to Stevensville. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Walsh, if I might, Madam Chair. But if I look at the north route, which is the third route, the one that serves Stevensville, somebody wanted to go to, not exactly clear, does this route go north to Stevensville or south from Stevensville?
This runs both ways, alternate route.
Okay.
So one hour it will run clockwise, the next hour it will run counterclockwise.
And so it will run from the hub to the west, to the north, to the east, and back to the hub, and then the next hour it will go counterclockwise.
That's correct.
So that depending on when you get on this bus, if you're in you're someplace halfway between Ridgeway and Stevensville, when the bus is going north, you've got to go north to Stevensville, to Douglastown, along the Queen Elizabeth Highway, to Thompson Road, back to the hub, get on a bus at the hub to go to Jarvis Street. This would look?
Yes, that's correct.
On the other hand, if you're fortunate enough to be going south, then you only have to go down to Crystal Beach through Ridgeway and then to the hub and then out to Jarvis. So I'm thinking that, and that may be perfectly fine. I happen to believe, and I'm no expert in transportation or transportation science, but I happen to believe that this is one of those deals where the more accessible you make a service, the more likely you're going to get people to utilize it, and the more people that utilize it, in our case, the more money we can generate in terms of funding from the province and in terms of revenues, although each and every ride costs the municipality money. But if we had more, then on a per capita basis, that would reduce the cost. So I'm not necessarily convinced that these routes are the best routes, how would I be convinced? Maybe more dialogue before we go out. I do fully agree, and I've received at least one email, and I apologize for not having gotten it out to all of you, but I did receive an email from Mike Cloutier, who expressed some comments regarding the report. We'll get that out to you. You can take a look at it. First and foremost on his list was that we're asked for a transit committee so that we can get input from residents and users and provider of the service. And we're about to embark upon the first major change in our routes and how we operate this system without any input at all from the soon-to-be-appointed committee. Now, I know that we're talking about making these changes effective the first week of September of this year. I also know that, according to the report later on in the agenda, this we're in an extension period. We missed a date where we could make that determination, so we're now in an extension period. So I don't know that there's any pressing need in March to have this change, because the changes won't take place until September. I would much prefer, Madam Chair, if we took a little bit more time, got a transit committee involved, and if it takes another 2 or 3 months for us to get this sorted out, I think that we should be doing that, simply because this is a large ticket item. It's like running an arena or a park. This is a service that a municipality provides at a cost. We're not going to generate revenues. It hasn't really even been identified how much money we would generate, and that would be offset by the cost. And I know that what we pay the operator, at least I believe, Mr. Walsh can confirm this, what we pay the operator is net of, we pay the flat amount, whatever fees the operator bears, they get to keep.
Mr. Walsh?
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair.
So that, and that's fine. I have a little bit of an issue with that, because I would think the more effort we put into getting more people on the buses, we should be the ones who should receive the reward. And if we don't do a good job at that, it shouldn't necessarily be the operator that is penalized. But if we believe in public transit, if we believe that this is a system that we think can succeed, we should be the ones taking, I think, the bulk of the risk. I know staff may prefer to have the risk assumed by others, but I think it's an indication of our commitment to the service. So I would much prefer that this be deferred, along with the later report, but there may be other councillors that wish to speak on this before.
Okay. Are there any other members of council that have comment stemming from the mayor's? Mr. Walsh, I just see you have your hand up. You wanted to add something?
If I may make a comment, Madam Chair. The intent of these two reports, the later report for the extension of the services, is one, to get the bus lined up for operating in September. With respect to the routes and stops, it was staff's intent to go forward with the routes primarily as they are. The stops, the major stops, the busy stops, we know where they would be, but it's sort of the less busy stops that we were looking for input from the Transit Advisory Committee once they were on board. The routes were developed, as we know, through the use of a transit consultant experienced in developing these types of studies. I think my point is we have to start somewhere. And should you go down this street instead of that street? We're not quite sure yet. We've consulted quite a few number of user groups in the development of this study in the first place. We think we've got it close to right now, but it is a work in progress, certainly. And will be tweaked once we've run the buses, find out where the people are, and received input through our future TAC. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Becerra?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Walsh answered partially some of the questions I was going to ask, and that was based on what are the next steps. And basically, we need a starting point somewhere. I sat in on a couple of the consultations with individuals and community groups, and I can tell you that if you were to ask every individual, everybody wants a bus stop 50 meters from where they need to get on the bus. So I don't know if putting that out there for additional consultation will get us any closer. It may be a different route, but it's all going to be geared towards who you ask. What, Mr. Walsh, is our timeline for what you need to undertake to roll this out in September? I know there are some comments made in the communicating results portion of the report, basically with the September rollout date and working backwards. What's the longest that we could hold off on giving council's endorsement and still have enough time for a successful rollout?
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were hoping to construct our main bus stops this summer through our sidewalk program. That contract's been let. There is an allowance in there for constructing these. So if we can get the routes accepted probably by next month, that would allow us sufficient time. If we may wait much more, now we're starting to slip past September 1st. We could have the routes in place, obviously. That's just turning the bus wheels a different direction. But we may be risking not having formalized stops and compliant stops in some of our busier locations.
Councilor Pizarro?
Through you, Madam Chair, to our clerk. Can you remind me what is the composition of our Transit Advisory Committee as far as stakeholder groups or residents? In my memory, I don't think we were looking at a huge number of residents on the committee.
Madam Clerk, I see Mr. Walsh had his hand up as well, indicating he could answer that. So I wasn't sure if you wanted to defer that question to him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Between the two of us, we might be able to come up with the composition. To the best of my memory, without the terms of reference in front of me, I know it's 4 community members at large, 1 regular transit user, 1 regular post-secondary transit user. That's up to 6. We've got 2 more. One of the FAST, is it? I think a FAST user, and then a member of council. I think that's the 8. Best of my memory.
Councilor Pizarro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, based on that, I recognize how our committee compositions are set up because it's structured very similar to other committees we have that advise council. But I don't know if I'm necessarily comfortable with allowing the Transit Advisory Committee to kind of take a complete fresh look at this and start marking up the drawings. You know, this was done through a series of community consultations with an expert in the field, with council's input at various points. And I know some of the things I suggest are not in the final draft. I'm comfortable with that. That's usually how the process plays out. But I like the direction that is proposed, whereas we adopt the routes in principle. We allow the bus operator to run the routes, figure out what the timing is, and by that point, we'll have the TAC on board to make any tweaks or changes they'd like to make. But to not adopt this tonight, or at least at some point in the next 30 days to keep our schedule, I don't know if I'm willing to go down that path and completely reopen this. Like I said, depending on the 6, 7, or 8 people you get on this committee could completely determine where these routes are going to be because everybody wants it close to home. And I think we have a good starting point, especially in Stevensville. We've gone from absolutely nothing to something, which I recognize is not perfect. But until we actually approve these routes in principle and allow the operator to drive the routes, and I wouldn't want to waste their time driving routes if council's not supportive of where we currently stand and know what we're in for, I don't necessarily know if that's a great road to go down, no pun intended. Secondly, we can make a bunch of changes for expanded routes, Stevensville as well, but hours of service equates to dollars. And if I remember back to budgets, this did not flow through quietly. There was a lot of discussion because this is a huge investment. And I don't know if every member of council was as committed when it came to spending the dollars as it is when it comes to designing the routes. and those things go hand in hand. So I'm all for deferring this for maybe a period of a month to solicit some additional community consultation as far as emails and, you know, a couple open houses, maybe accessibility advisory, things like that, speed that up to the next month versus waiting. But I don't really know if I want to go beyond that and open up this again at this point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Councillor Passero makes some very good points. However, I just wanted to say that I don't know necessarily that having the Transit Committee take a look at this with fresh eyes and change things is really the recommended course. I think that they are being formed, the committee is being formed for a specific purpose, and that's to offer a sober second thought, I think, to the whole entire process. The other thing that I think should be mentioned is that you know, you wanted Mr. Walsh said that that if we could approve that, that would make it easier for them to erect those thoughts that that would need the accessibility point with the sidewalk infrastructure being developed. My fear is that we go ahead and approve this right now, and then it gets changed later, and we've already spent for thoughts that shouldn't have been in place in the first place. So I would like to see this deferred, if only for a month then, so that we can gather our opinions and sit down with Mr. Walsh and his staff that have put these routes together and really kind of be circumvent about this or circumspect about this. So that's my opinion.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Mr. Walsh, I see you had your hand up. Did you have further comment?
Yes, just on Councillor Butler's comments, Madam Chair, our plan isn't to install all the stops this summer, just key stops. So those ones, they certainly will not be throwaway. We have stops there already. There are our busier stops. It's sort of the stops along the new parts of the route that we're not quite sure. We think we've got it right, but it needs input, certainly.
Thank you. Councillor Knott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Based on Mr. Walsh's comments right now, then I'm okay with giving a second sober thought and deferring this out 30 days, postponing it together. But what I'd ask is, can you divide, Mr. Walsh, those stops out for us so that we can see what the phased-in process is going to be? I mean, there was a lot of material in this report and everything, and it is a lot to digest over just 3 days. I think secondly is that we need to identify who our target market is. And if we're going to solicit the additional feedback, it'd be those, the seniors, the students, the specific people that we know will utilize this. I know that earlier when the mayor and I were having a conversation about this, a lot of that stemmed around students and this upcoming summer and through the winter being able to flow to part-time jobs and places of employment in an economical and efficient way. So those are just my thoughts.
Thank you, Councillor Knott. Councillor McDermott?
Well, I tend to agree with Councillor Knott and Councillor Passero that a month, I suppose, isn't going to make much difference. I think the most important thing is that we adopt a system that is going to make the people that have been lacking this service for some time to finally come to grips with this so they're able to move around. And I think it's only fair that we stay committed to that. So I don't see any problem with looking at the routes again or second sober thought. I just don't want it to interfere with making Fort Erie Transit inclusive in the proper time. And I think the proper time is now, because the folks that I talk to in Stevensville seem to be clamoring for it, so I'm not in a big hurry to delay any of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just a couple of things. Looking at what we have and as far as the report coming to us, If I remember correctly, Mr. Walsh, maybe you can update me or remind me. Did we not get maps a couple months ago showing the routes, the new routes that were proposed? And were we not asked to give any comments that we may have a few months ago?
Mr. Walsh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Council was certainly provided the maps in the report in October, Phase 1 and 2, which was the route study itself. I know there's always the opportunity to solicit comments. I'm not sure if it was asked specifically though. I can't recall that off the top of my head.
I think we got all the routes for Stevensville was included in that, was it not?
Mr. Walsh?
Yes, it was.
Well, I mean, where I'm looking at this, I mean, we've gone through the process. We've gone through the experts and the consulting companies to come in and take a look at what we feel we need. Staff has been working with transit for years now. And I'm more than confident that our staff knows what needs to be done in the areas where we do have transit now and the changes that need to be made. And along with the consultants working with them, they came up with the plan. The Stevensville area in the new route, well, that's something that is the same thing as when we first started our routes in the beginning. We put it out there. We figure we got it right. And so now we need to go through the system before we start going to an advisory committee to give us some advice on how we can maybe make some changes. I mean, when we're looking at putting a route together, I think we need to go to staff, and then we need to go with the consultants and put the routes together. That's where we start, and then we work with the advisory committee. Now, I can understand that, you know, maybe we want to work on, well, this stop doesn't work and that stop doesn't work. Well, we don't know if it isn't going to work or if it is going to work until we start utilizing it. And that's what this year is all about. Let's get started. So, I mean, deferring it for 30 days, I guess it's really not going to hurt, but I don't see why it's necessary. We've had lots of time to look at this. Staff and the consultants have looked at this. They put it together. We're going to go forward with an advisory committee for transit, which is going to help in the process of tweaking it as we move forward and making the transit system better as we move forward. So we haven't had an advisory committee for years now, and we have a pretty good system. From people that I've talked to, yes, we need some improvements, but they're happy with the improvements that they're seeing come forward. And those improvements that have been coming forward are coming forward from staff and consultants. So I think we need to move forward with it and let staff do what they need to do. We're putting the advisory committee together. It's going to be here. We're going to have some people here next week from what the clerk tells me. We'll have an advisory committee in place that can work with staff over the summer months, and I don't think that we need to hold staff up any longer.
Councilor Passero, and then your worship.
Madam Chair, I'll defer to his worship because I was going to move a deferral motion, so I will hold off on that.
Thank you, and I just wanted to point out that in response to one of the questions that I asked in terms of the routes, whether what the changes were that have been made in the routes from last October when we received the report till now, I was told essentially the routing proposed in IS 34-2016 is intact. There have been some minor changes to allow for a connection from Stevensville to Ridgeway Crystal Beach and a better level of service for Oak Hill Forest that the consultant did not propose, and I don't know if anybody asked for. The basis for that modification was local understanding of the system, whatever that means, driver input, and to intuitively provide better service. So intuitively means that any one of us could give advice as to how the system should be set up. Those are the types of comments that make me uncomfortable. And when I think about transportation flows in Fort Erie. We know that there's a lot of east-west along Dominion and Garrison. We know that there's a lot of internal transportation within the old North End, South End, West End. And we know that there, we do know, this is not intuitively, we know that there's a lot of north-south movement of people from Crystal Beach through Ridgeway to Stevensville, Douglastown, and vice versa. The issue that I had raised last fall was, shouldn't there be some better recognition of the of that flow of people? Because there very well may be a need for more transportation service. It could cost more, or it could be just an allocation of what we've already got and what we're paying for and what's proposed in the routes. In particular, the only service between Ridgeway, Crystal Beach, and Stevensville directly will be off-peak hours, essentially the afternoon, 5 days a week. Nothing in the morning when people who may need to go to work in the summer at one of the places in Stevensville or vice versa, and nothing for seniors who may want to go shopping in Ridgeway or Crystal Beach. So that I don't know that I think that there needs to be a further look at this, and it may be that I'm out to lunch, but I think that I'm not on this particular point, and I'm as intuitive as anybody else. So that's why I think that we need to take another 30 days to look at this. That would take us, I think, to April the 22nd. No, the committee meeting would be the week before that. So I guess that's what we'd be looking at.
Thank you. Are you moving that?
Well, I won't move that. I've been doing all kinds of speaking, but I think Councillor...
And I've seen Councillor Lubert's had his hand up.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just assuming that we're going to make the motion for a deferral, are we going to get a clear explanation as to what it is we're asking staff to do? Are we changing routing? Are we? What is it that we're asking staff to do and come back with? Or are we just looking at this and going to make the suggestions?
Your Worship.
Well, what I would suggest we do, for those of us who still have questions, pass those questions on to the staff so that they can respond to them. And when we get the committee in place, they'll have a couple of weeks to at least take a look at what's there, provide us with their comments. I'm not proposing that they revamp the routes. I'm proposing that they take a look at it and say to us, well, you know, this is fine, or did you think about this, or what have you, so that I agree we need to move forward. The question is, we need to move forward so quickly that we're having to make too many changes later on. So that's really, I think, what we should do. If we have questions, pass them on to staff, get the responses. We can even share those among each other, and on the 18th or 17th or whatever it was, in a position to move forward.
So just to get it clear, we're not asking staff to do anything. All we're saying staff to hold off, and then we ask the questions. So we need, I mean, staff needs to have some direction too. What are they prepared? What are we prepared to? Are we looking for some options, maybe some changes that staff maybe overlooked? Because, you know, if we're going to delay this for 30 days and they want to start this new route in September, you know, this new route might not get started until December. Because, you know, holding off for 1 month doesn't say that, you know, we just push everything a month. You hold off for 1 month, that pushes everything 3 months.
Your Worship?
Well, that's not exactly what Mr. Walsh said. He said that we can easily utilize a month. And, I mean, I've got some suggestions that I would like the staff to consider. What about some type of earlier hours? Is there a market for that? Should there be different phasing? I don't know, but I'd like to get those answers, and I'll circulate those among the counselors, and some of the other counselors may have other similar questions. But I do believe that I'd rather give some further thought to this, get some outside input as well, before we put the hammer down, because this report, tied to the second report, is talking about a $2.15 million investment by this community. I don't have a problem waiting 3 weeks to figure out whether that's the best expenditure for what's being proposed.
Are there any other comments or questions? Councillor Becerra, did you want to move forward with that motion to defer?
Yes, Madam Chair. So I'd like to put a motion forward that we postpone this report until Tuesday, April 18th, for opportunity for council, members of the public, and the Transit Advisory Committee to take a first glance and offer feedback.
All those in favor? That carries. Now I'm happy to hand the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Zanko, for chairing that. And that takes us then to Planning and Development Services. And is that Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now opened. We have a presentation, a couple of presentations and delegations this evening. The first is with Mr. Jim Thibert, General Manager, Fort Erie Economic Development and Tourism Corporation, and Luciano Piccioni, President, RCI Consulting Limited, regarding industrial land strategy. There is a recommendation moved by Councillor Passero that Council extends the time of the delegation regarding the industrial land strategy to a maximum of 30 minutes. All those in favor? That's unanimous. Mr. Thibert?
Won't take long. Welcome. I have to catch a bus.
Good.
So, actually, I'm glad you talked, Mr. Mayor, about generations. As, in terms of industrial land, the EDC has been talking about this for a long time. But I'll tell you two quick points. The first is that our consultant that will be presenting shortly is Luciano Piccioni, President of RCI Consulting, and I believe when he left Hamilton, we were his first client. We were the first client. 1A. The second thing is that when we did the initial study, we had no industrial land. We were presenting that we were running out of industrial land, and so what we came up with was a plan for premier shovel-ready sites. So we put all our shovel-ready sites together, and we moved out every one of them after the work that we had Luge put together for us in terms of presentation material, documentation, readiness. And we moved them all out in 3 years. We sold out of them. So we've been floundering ever since trying to get rid of sites that aren't really premier sites. And he's actually the godfather of brownfield legislation in Ontario. And he's produced more CIPs as a consultant than pretty much everywhere else in Canada, and he is very well recognized. But we did that work in 2003, and it took us till 2006 to get out of there, and he just reminded me of that fact a few moments ago, and at the same time, deja vu all over again. Mayor Redekoff was mayor at that time, too. So when we talk about generations, here we are again. Quiet generation, right? So we're prepared today to bring you finally the industrial land strategy. And that was put together with the Economic Development Corporation and a lot of help from the town of Fort Erie. And I want to point out that we had formed a technical working committee, and then it became the technical advisory committee. The mayor, His Worship, is ex officio, Rick Brady, head of our planning department, Tom Cook at CAO, Callie Walsh, director of public works. I know I get all these wrong, but that's okay. I'm old school. And Kira Dolch from the planning department, Carolee Grummet and Karen Odette of our staff, Ricky O'Kane, and myself. And so we've been at this literally 364 and a quarter, if not three-quarter days, because tomorrow will be a year since we tendered that first interim report to council. And then we move forward on this project. Just a quick reminder that these don't stand alone. These strategies that we're putting together are an overall strategy to help support the town's growth and prosperity. And in fact, it follows suit with all of the things that we are doing, and recently surrendered the Labor Workforce Steering Committee strategy, the Deloitte Economic Preparedness Study, and now the Industrial Land Strategy. So these are things that fall within the purview of the Economic Development Corporation, and we're trying to help the Town Council be as prepared as possible for any significant development and future development. So without further ado, that's not working. Thank you very much.
I assume this is on. Thank you, Jim. So I will definitely try to stay to our time limit. And this was a very lengthy and comprehensive study of industrial land in Fort Erie. And as Jim mentioned, there have been several phases to this. But the primary purpose of the strategy that's before you this evening is really to provide recommendations to help ensure that the town has an adequate supply of designated and serviced industrial land to accommodate future employment growth. And that means we looked at the supply side, we looked at the demand side, and then we put the two together. And ultimately, in the latter part of this process, we also looked at potential land outside the urban boundary to help basically meet the supply-demand equation. In terms of context, as Jim mentioned, there have been sort of various studies that have been done over the last 15 years that have identified a shortage of serviced and shovel-ready industrial land in Fort Erie. The timing of this particular study and also the timing of the interim report is really fortuitous in the sense that it can be provided to the region as input into their MCR exercise. And my understanding is that that exercise right now is in a bit of a holding pattern because they are waiting for the province to finalize the updates to the growth plan and also some methodology that they're coming out with in terms of the growth plan. So perfect timing for this. So as mentioned, the first phase of this really was to look at industrial land requirements. So we peer-reviewed the Hempson draft industrial land report. We then went on to prepare the interim report, which identified that, and this has not changed, it's identified that there's a need for 184 gross hectares of additional industrial land in Fort Erie by 2036 and 273 gross hectares by 2041. Being that we are now in 2017, we are a little bit in between those two projection periods, and we're supposed to be planning for a 20-year supply of designated industrial land. So the number really should fall somewhere between those two, and we can do the math, but you know, we're probably looking at about 200 hectares. So the second phase, which we just completed, was the assessment of industrial land. So we actually looked at designated industrial land inside the urban boundary and determined its appropriateness for use for industrial purposes, and then looked at potential industrial land outside the urban boundary to identify lands that can be added through an urban boundary expansion, again, through the regional MCR exercise. So just a reminder, Council, as Jim indicated, a year ago tomorrow, did pass a resolution that endorsed the statistical analysis and the interim report, which looked again at the supply-demand. Identified a need for an additional 184 gross hectares of industrial land in Fort Erie by 2036, advised the region to include that in the industrial land supply for Fort Erie as part of the MCR, and requested that the EDTC complete the study and expand the technical steering committee, which we did. We expanded the technical steering committee and brought in additional members from town staff, and they've been very helpful in not only supplying data and information, but helping to develop the comprehensive evaluation framework that we used to evaluate industrial land both inside and outside the urban boundary. So Jim's already talked about the members, and I want to also add my thanks to Mayor Redekop, town staff, EDTC staff, and also the EDTC board in helping to get us to the point where we are right now. In terms of the policy framework, we're not operating in a vacuum here in Fort Erie. Of course, we're required to meet the provincial policy statement, the provincial growth plan, the Niagara Regional Official Plan, and the town official plan. And these planning policies, and I want to make this point very clearly, they identify a very important direction for this study. And that is that at the local municipal level and at the regional level, there should be an adequate supply of designated industrial land, and this land should be adequately serviced and include a range and choice of suitable sites for a wide mix and range of employment uses. So it's not enough to just go through a planning exercise and have enough designated land that looks really good on a map. You actually have to service this land. It has to be available for development. And you have to have enough range and choice, both in terms of size and location of these industrial lands, to accommodate a range and mix of employment uses. So I really want you to remember that as we go through this, because it's key. It's not just a numbers exercise. And that's really how we developed this strategy, was to make sure that it respected that direction, policy direction, and that it reflected it. So the first thing on the supply side was we examined vacant designated industrial land in the urban area. We looked at the mapping and the data supplied by the town, which indicated there was 37 properties totaling 235 hectares. We looked at aerial photos, official plan zoning, how much of that was designated environmental conservation overlay, and we visited every site to make sure that it was in fact vacant, and we did find a site that was shown up as vacant and wasn't. So it was good that we did that. Now, the key to determining how much of that 235 hectares is actually usable was to determine how much of it was developable. So we subtracted out all of the EC overlay lands because they're not developable without an EIS. We then subtracted out all the lands that weren't fully serviced. And then we subtracted out all the lands that aren't shovel ready. In other words, they have a number of issues. They may have limited or restricted access. The sites themselves may be very small. They may require geotechnical investigation or filling. There's all kinds of things that would render a site not immediately developable. But when we did that, what we found was that that number looked really good, the 235 hectares. But when you subtract out the EC overlay lands, which is 84 hectares, all of a sudden, from 100%, you go down to about 63.5%. You then subtract out all the lands that aren't serviced. That's another almost 40 hectares. And now you're down to 110 hectares, or about 47% of what you started with. And then if you look at the number that are actually shovel-ready, you got six properties totaling 68 hectares. And the town owns only two of those properties, and those two properties total 3.6 hectares. Now, I'm going to show you this geographically, but I wanted to show you what it looks like in terms of how it just drops off as you start to slice the pie down to what's actually shovel ready or even what's fully serviced. That's only 13 properties at 110 hectares. So what happens is the ability of the town and the ETCC to attract various types, a range and mix of industrial uses, is limited when you actually start looking at what's truly serviced and truly shovel ready. And it also means that the town and the 40-year EDTC can't influence employment densities on industrial land when you only own two properties at 3.6 hectares. Okay, so I'll show you what that looks like as we go through that progression, but on the map. So here's Stevensville. By the end, Stevensville drops out. So I'm going to show you, so there's only three properties there. And here's the other 34. Now I want you to watch what happens as we go from full supply designated, and we drop out the EC overlay lands. So if you watch closely, see, and I'll do it again, you can see how much land disappears. Now let's drop out everything that's not fully serviced. Another 40 hectares disappears. And by the way, of that 40 hectares, about 30 of it isn't planned to be serviced until 2041 or later. And that's an issue. Now, how much of that is actually shovel-ready? What you got left? And I find that that is a much clearer visual demonstration of how a big number on paper looks good, and then when you actually start, how much of it is developable, how much is serviced, how much is shovel-ready, it doesn't look so good anymore. So we've been through this. I mean, these are just the statistics in terms of how much of that land falls off. But really, less than half of the designated industrial land in Fort Erie is fully serviced. Only 29% of all the designated industrial land in Fort Erie is truly shovel-ready. Bottom line, Fort Erie has a critical shortage of serviced and shovel-ready industrial land. There is no denying it. So we've given you the numbers, we've given you a bar chart, given you maps. That's the conclusion. So Part of the way to address that is that the town, and this is one of the recommendations, would develop and implement an industrial land development program. So that would focus on acquiring, servicing, and preparing industrial land for development and taking the steps necessary to make that industrial land truly shovel-ready. Now, even in those properties that we showed you, there are a number that are already in the pipeline to be developed. So sites like A2, which has been sold to a metal manufacturer who plans to construct a new plant on the site, B8, sold to a trucking company, and that parcel's already been incorporated into their operations, and B12, part of that was sold to a manufacturing company that plans to build a new plant on the site. So when you take those out, you lose even more land, and you've only got about 55 hectares that are shovel-ready. Then we start thinking about some of the bigger projects, such as CMS or the CMP at Fort Erie Racetrack or even the Miller Creek Marina. If even one of those happens, that's going to increase the demand for associated industrial land in Fort Erie, and that number is going to fall even more. So it really is a critical situation at the moment. All right, so that's the supply side. Let's look at the demand side. So employment in Fort Erie remained stable between 2001 and 2011, despite a serious recession and a slow economic recovery. In terms of the projections in the current regional official plan, Fort Erie was projected to capture 13.9% of projected regional employment growth between 2011 and 2031. Now, the province updated and extended its growth plan projections, and the region has to use those updated projections of total regional employment and then allocate to each of the local municipalities how much population, household growth, and resident employed labor force and employment they will get. Now, and this is really important, the region's background report for their MCR notes that the pattern of employment throughout the region has not really changed in any significant way over the last two census periods. Population and household growth did, but employment stayed, the relative distribution of jobs stayed pretty much the same between 2001 and 2011. Yet, the region's updated MCR, rather than allocating 13.9% of employment growth throughout the region to Fort Erie, allocates only 7.5% of total employment growth to 2041 to Fort Erie. So that's a 46% decrease in relative employment growth. Why? Well, primarily because the MCR is basically saying that there are shifting population and employment growth to municipalities in the West based on what we've seen in the last 5 and 10 years, and that the jobs will follow. That because those municipalities have higher rates of population and household growth, so West Lincoln, Lincoln, Pelham, Niagara-on-the-Lake, Grimsby, that they'll get a higher percentage of the jobs. But there's one problem with that. When we look at the analysis of historical employment growth data and trends in Niagara, there is not a strong correlation between the location of population and household growth and the location of employment growth. Remember, it's the demand for employment land and industrial land is based on jobs, not residents employed labor force. The difference being, you can have a lot of people moving to your community, build, you know, occupying and building houses there, and their residents employed labor force. But in those western municipalities in the Niagara region, there's a high out commuting rate. And it's actually been getting higher over the last few census periods. So that's the real rub in the ointment here. It's because of those high rates of out commuting for work, that doesn't mean that the high rates of growth for population, housing, and even resident employed labor force in those local municipalities is going to translate into similar growth rates for place of work employment, which is what drives demand for employment land. So when we looked at the data, that's exactly what we saw. There is not a strong correlation there. Unfortunately, the MCR exercise assumes there is. So that's why you see that big difference in our projection of employment growth and the regional MCR exercise. So if we look at the actual numbers, here they are. And again, you can see that between 2011 and 2041, under the Industrial Land Development Strategy Employment Growth Scenario, the number of jobs in Fort Erie would increase by 11,070. Under the MCR Employment Growth Scenario, they would increase by 5,950. So it's a 46% difference. Okay. Now, the problem is that if the town of Fort Erie, I should say if the region does not designate additional industrial land in the town of Fort Erie, that MCR projection will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't have the land, the employment will go elsewhere, either within Niagara or outside of Niagara. So that is one sure way to make sure that that MCR projection is correct, is not to do anything. Don't service any of your existing industrial land and don't designate any more new industrial land and service it. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay, so how do we translate that demand into the amount of employment land that's needed? So approximately 65 employment the employment growth in Fort Erie will take place on vacant developable industrial land. The rest will take place on what's called population-related employment land. Other than the forecast employment growth, all of the assumptions that we used are pretty consistent with the regional MCR assumptions and the original Hampson report. Okay, so you can see the number of additional jobs that Fort Erie will be planning for on industrial land in this community. But again, without an adequate supply and choice of land, industrial land, this growth will not take place in Fort Erie. It will simply go elsewhere. So once you know how many jobs are going to be accommodated on industrial land, you have to determine what are the employment densities. So we looked at employment densities for comparable municipalities. And you cannot compare Fort Erie to GTA municipalities that are getting high employment densities because they have a very high percentage of office employment, which is not here, and it's not going to happen here. So we reviewed the actual employment densities and employment densities used for forecasting by municipalities like Brantford and Kingston. And what we're finding is that the actuals there are between 60 and 20 jobs per net hectare, and they're using anywhere between 20 and 30 jobs per net hectare to do their forecasting, okay? And the Hampson report, in fact, indicated that that was the industry standard sort of for Niagara. And Fort Erie staff, the EDCC staff, have indicated that recent industrial land development and reoccupation of existing industrial properties has yielded 20 to 25 employees per net hectare. So we really think that an average employment density in Fort Erie will be in the 20 to 30 employees per net hectare range with a most likely of 25. That's a realistic density figure, and it's a realistic range. And that's what we told the regional staff when we met with them on the MCR exercise. We did that, a number of the members of the TSC committee, including town staff, myself, and Fort Erie DTC staff, met with the region. That was quite some time ago. So in terms of the numbers, well, if you run all the numbers, supply and demand analysis, and here we go. Based on this, the town is likely to run out of vacant service industrial land in about 8 years. If any of those projects we talked about, the bigger projects, come online in that intervening period, that could drop. And you could be out of service industrial land in 5 years. Okay. By 2036, the town's likely to have a shortage of developable vacant industrial land equal to the 184 gross hectares that you have requested that the region put or add as through the MCR exercise. By 2041, that would be 273 gross hectares. So it's clear, I can't make it any more clear, that the town and the region must act now to service your existing designated industrial land, if possible, and to designate and service additional industrial land to address the shortage. So the recommendations that come out of that are that, again, just reemphasizing the need to designate that 184 gross hectares of additional industrial land to 2036, ensuring that all additional vacant land added to the urban boundary is included in the Gateway Community Improvement Project area and eligible for the Gateway incentives. That's so that this land is competitive and attractive to industries looking to locate here. To review the master servicing plans for the town to determine if timing of the servicing of that 40 hectares that's not currently fully serviced and not planned to be serviced until 2041 or later can be bumped up. Now, that 84 hectares of EC lands, the idea came up through the committee that if we did a area-wide environmental impact statement, instead of doing property by property, that would be a good use of resources. And it certainly is, and that's one of the recommendations. However, when we evaluated the lands that have the EC overlay, we found that a number of them scored pretty high for industrial use, but a lot of them didn't. So it's not just doing the study, but focusing that study on where you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck, which is the properties that scored higher based on our evaluation framework. And finally, formally advising industrial property owners, because there have been some instances where part of their lands are designated ECM, part are not, and if they do not keep up with their property maintenance and cutting down vegetation on the non-EC lands, they can over time become overgrown and become part of the EC lands. So it's important to let them know that they've got to keep that up. Now, the second phase, as I said, was evaluating land inside the urban boundary and outside the urban boundary using the evaluation framework. The evaluation framework was developed in consultation with the Technical Steering Committee, and we developed a number of criteria. We weighted those more towards the criteria that we thought were most important, which servicing status and cost of service, location, size and configuration of the property. These were weighted higher, and then land use compatibility, and then whether or not property was inside or outside the urban boundary and how far from the urban boundary. Once we did that evaluation, and all of this, of course, is contained in the report, when we looked at the properties inside the urban boundary, we found that, again, as I mentioned earlier, one of them is already being used, so it was removed from the inventory, and seven others were not really appropriate for industrial use. Now, this could be because the property was too small, too close to residential, limited access, et cetera. And our recommendation is that the town's planning and development services could look and determine the most appropriate uses of these seven properties, but they total 15 hectares, and for our purposes, if that is done, then they can be removed from the supply. So they could be designated for other uses other than industrial, for which they would be more appropriate. And if you do that, then that number 184 goes up to 199 hectares, call it 200. And that's by 2036, and then the 273 goes up to 288 by 2041. And as I mentioned earlier, really the area-wide EIS is a good idea, but it should be focused on the properties that score higher based on the evaluation framework. And finally, we looked at properties outside the urban boundary. So the Technical Steering Committee identified eight sites totaling 500 hectares, so quite a bit of land. Each site comprised one or more properties. And one of the sites was small. It was a single property, and it was eliminated because it was too small and really not suitable for industrial use. So we ended up looking at seven properties just under 500 hectares. EDTC staff, myself, and town planning staff on the Technical Steering Committee visited each site. We took photos, notes, looked at the location, the size, the configuration, accessibility, whether the site was close to the urban boundary or farther away, whether it had existing buildings and potential for land use conflicts with other uses out in the rural area. And we then applied the comprehensive evaluation framework to the seven sites. Town staff provided quite a bit of the data that we needed to do that, and we scored each site out of 100. Now, I should mention that if you're looking at the report, the scores for the sites outside the urban boundary are not directly comparable to the scores for the sites inside the urban boundary. So if a site, for example, scores 70 on inside the urban boundary and a site scores 68 outside, that does not necessarily mean that site inside the urban boundary is better than the site outside the urban boundary, because there are a number of criteria on which sites outside the urban boundary could not score 100%. For example, servicing. They couldn't get 100% because none of them are fully serviced. Okay, and also there's a criteria for being inside or outside the urban boundary, and obviously they couldn't score 100% on that. So just want to make a note of that if you're looking at the scores and trying to compare them. So when we look at the sites outside the urban boundary and we evaluated them, you can see that site 5, which is a large site in close proximity to the Netherby Road QEW interchange, provides a very large potential industrial area. It has a relatively low cost of service and an excellent location. So that site came out significantly higher than all of the other sites. Then moving down to site number 2, again, also a very large site. The one thing I should mention about site 5 before I forget, part of that site is in the path of the Mid-Peninsula Corridor. So if that road is built, that whole 159 hectares will not be available. How much of that would not be available, we don't know. But it's something to keep in mind. Okay. Because if that site's added and that road is built, then not all of that land is going to be available. So moving on to site 2, also a large site, adjacent to the current urban boundary, just as Site 5 is. And it also has a relatively low cost of service per hectare, but not as good a location, obviously, as Site 5. And if Site 2 is added to the urban boundary, Site 3 is also close by, and it should be added at the same time if Site 2 is added. Scoring just below Site 2 is Site 1, which is down off of Highway 3. Now, this site, again, offers a large, well-configured site, direct access to Highway Number 3, but it's more expensive to service per hectare, and it's also more than a kilometer from the current urban boundary. So that presents some issues in terms of adding that to the current urban boundary. And then, obviously, we get into Sites 8 and 6, which are closer to the CMS lands, and Site 4. Now, what that means in terms of the recommendations is that we think that Site 5 should be added to the urban boundary during the current regional MCR exercise. And also during the current exercise, you could consider the region could consider adding Site 2 or alternatively Site 1, but we think Site 2 scores a little bit higher to the urban boundary. And if it's not added during this go-around, it should be the next MCR, a regional MCR exercise. As I mentioned earlier, if Site 3 is added, you know, Site 2 is not a big site, but it's close to Site 3 and it'd be easily serviced at the same time as Site 3. It should be added if Site 3 is added. It should be Site 3 that should be added if Site 2 is added. And in terms of Sites 6 and 8, if and when the CMS lands are serviced, those sites would score a lot higher. So they should be reevaluated and considered for addition to the urban boundary at that time. And all industrial land that's added to the urban boundary should be designated prime employment areas. Now, the proposed growth plan, and that's where prime employment areas comes from, requires municipalities to identify and designate suitable lands within settlement areas that are near major goods movement facilities and corridors, including major highway interchanges, as prime employment areas. So the region can, in fact, identify other existing employment areas within the settlement areas that are also prime employment areas where appropriate. Prime employment areas are defined in the growth plan as areas of employment within settlement areas that are designated in an official plan and protected over the long term for uses that are land extensive or have low employment density and require these locations, including manufacturing, warehousing, and logistics, and appropriated associated uses and ancillary facilities. Well, those are the very types of uses that are permitted in the town zoning bylaw for most of its industrial land, and the very types of employment uses that typically locate on these industrial lands that we're talking about that would be designated outside the urban boundary. So I think it's important that that point be made to the region that, you know, these lands, if added to the urban boundary, should be designated prime employment areas. And the benefit of that is that when the region and town are calculating minimum density targets for designated greenfield areas, the prime employment areas can be excluded from this measurement. That's in the proposed growth plan. And what that does is it provides some flexibility to the region to designate, if it designates these as prime employment area lands, to even with a lower growth projection, add additional employment lands to the town of Fort Erie. So that's the reason for that recommendation. And again, ensuring all vacant industrial land that's added to the urban boundary is also included in the Gateway Community Improvement Project area and eligible for the Gateway Incentive. So to sum up, and then just some monitoring and reporting, one of the things we did find was that, you know, as we went through this and started checking data and mapping and so on, was that there was a need for better information sharing and communication on the current vacant industrial land supply inside the urban boundary, and that that should be maintained up to date, and that there should be an annual monitoring and reporting to council regarding the supply and absorption of industrial land and employment densities that are actually being achieved on that land. That's really important too. So that will help with not only to give council a better picture of what's actually being absorbed, and what kind of employment densities you're getting on that land, but also to make sure that that information is available for town staff and the Fort Erie EDCC in terms of planning and servicing and other actions to ensure that there is, in fact, an adequate supply of designated and serviced industrial land to accommodate a range and mix of employment uses. So with that, that wraps up our presentation. we've gone a little over time. I do apologize for that, but I do want to thank council for their time, and Jim and myself are available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Is there any member of council that would like to ask a question? Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, and I just wanted to highlight that, Mr. Piccioni, you didn't go over your time.
I'm not done yet.
There you are. I wonder if I could just, I want to do a little bit of a lead-in. I want to express appreciation for the work that you've done here. I know that you worked very closely with town staff, EDT staff, and that this was a long process, probably longer than you originally anticipated, and that we had the opportunity on a number of occasions to talk about the importance of this document helping to fulfill a strategy that the town of Fort Erie requires when dealing with the region and ultimately with respect to the province in connection with expanding urban boundaries to meet what we believe and understand to be our needs. So in terms of the presentation you made, I very much appreciate the format and the recommendations near the end and the identification of the sites outside the urban boundary. I had a couple of questions, if I might, though, Madam Chair. Here's where I get to the questions. The first had to do with, in connection with land that's within the urban boundary currently, zoned industrial, that's not fully serviced or shovel-ready, you did, I believe, allude to the fact that there was some assessment done of how easy it would be to service those lands. Correct?
Yes.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe that even if lands outside the urban boundary might score higher for a variety of reasons, it's going to be more difficult for us to get lands put into the urban boundary than to service lands that are already there that have the potential, have a realistic potential for development.
That is a valid point, certainly a valid observation. The issue is that, and that's part of the recommendation, is to look at that 40 hectares that is still not fully serviced and determine exactly what it would cost to service it. And part of that would be to look, compare that to what it would cost to service the lands outside the urban boundary. We have a pretty good idea based on the data supplied by town staff of what it would cost to service those lands outside the urban boundary. And I think part of the problem is that a lot of that 40 hectares is sort of what we'll call legacy sites. They've been designated and zoned for a long, long time. And perhaps at the time they were designated and zoned, either the information wasn't available, you know, or there was other reasons why those lands were designated and zoned. So now a decision has to be made. Let's look at them, determine what it's going to cost to service them. And if they are prohibitively expensive to service and won't be serviced for a long time, then frankly, they should be considered for swap. So in other words, pulled out of the supply altogether, redesignated for something else. And we've left that to town staff in terms of the other 15 hectares. And you could add this to that. And then if that's going to be used for something else, then that number gets added to the amount that you would designate outside the urban boundary.
Right. And your report would be helpful for us in working with the region if we have to persuade them to make that type of swap.
Yes. And as I recall at the meeting that we had with regional staff on the MCR, this was in fact discussed. We did discuss that, that may end up being one of the options that's presented to them.
You expressed some concern about the significant reduction in the allocation of employment growth by the region so far, following the most recent adjustments by the province. How frequently will the region review those forecasts? Do you know?
Every 5 years, in theory. They have to review the regional official plan every 5 years, so I would assume that they would, at that time, review those forecasts.
So I can take it then, I think we can all take it from your comments and your concerns, that the time for us to be trying to impress upon the region the importance to allocate the industrial lands that we need and perhaps undermine those numbers is now.
It's absolutely now. And from my perspective, as an aside, perhaps the conversation isn't about is their employment growth projection right, or is the one in the report that I prepared right? It's how much additional industrial land does Fort Erie need to get us to, really now, should be 2037. And by the time this all rolls out and the amendment's actually in place, it'll probably be 2018, to be quite honest. So let's talk about 2038, because the 20-year planning horizon is what you're looking at. So that's where I think the discussion needs to focus with regional staff.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Riccioni. Thank you, Mr. Tiber, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Your Worship. Mr. Tiber?
Oh, if I just might talk to that for a second. Is that enough?
Okay.
Aside from some of the 9 hectares left, which is on that map, two things. The balance of many properties are just not marketable. So serviceability is impossible, but who wants them? Nobody wants them. They're just in bad places, bad locations, and have issues. So you have really not met the challenge of let's have service ready and variety of sites. Second thing is, why are we doing this? What do you need industrial land for? Well, you need industrial land for future growth and prosperity. We control nothing. So if you look at the balance of properties that we have up on the screen right now, we currently have an offer to purchase and develop and play right now on D4. Currently have an offer to develop and purchase on B4, which is lands at Airbus. B8 is already gone, and we currently are dealing with somebody who's looking at the balance of property in the industrial park. So of the 69 hectares that you see there, the only property that's available is Fleet. It's owned by the private sector, and we're not certain what they want to do with it yet. We contact with them about it. It's our only next play. But what I can tell you is we don't control the densities on those properties. These density equations are based on hypothesis. We can work that backwards. If we assume that we've been getting 25 jobs per hectare, how many more jobs do you need to grow this town over the next 25 years? You can just multiply it out. 25 times the number of hectares equals the number of jobs that we're most likely going to get. But that's assuming that we control the land. So we could lose a 100-acre swath to somebody that wants to put a giant warehouse on it because it's eligible. Have to look at what we do with the balance of land, but we don't have 5 years to wait. We're moving forward on these properties and hoping to see development occur or be announced in the next year or less. And so then that 69 hectares becomes something like 8 hectares. So I just want to make that point. We're out of land. But land is quantitatively identified as still vacant, actually has offers on it.
Thank you. Any other members? Councillor Zanko and then Councillor Nutt.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to thank you both. I think the presentation was excellent this evening, and particularly slides 7 and 8 and the explanation you provided have been very helpful. I can tell you that in 2014 on the campaign trail and still currently, what my constituents always say is bring industry to Fort Erie. And this clearly shows that, there's a lack of industrial lands. And when you try to communicate that, the first thing my constituents say is, what are you talking about? We have tons of lands available. So the way you've fully explained this, I think will be beneficial for everyone listening in essentially us being able to continually communicate that. One question that I did have regarding page 24, my question is staff, and perhaps Mr. Tiber, you could answer this, are you already in a position that you're in coordination with staff lobbying and requesting the region to consider adding to the urban boundaries, or is this something that you're bringing to us this evening
for support. And I guess my question more so is what are the steps? We know that we're in urgent demand of industrial lands. What are the next steps to solve this?
Well, that's a very good question. That's why we're here tonight. This is the Economic Development and Tourism Corporation's industrial land strategy. And when we provide it to you tonight and we surrender it to you and you accept it, then you have to decide whether it's town policy. So at some point, this will become the town of Fort Erie strategic plan for industrial growth. And that's what would go over to the region and to Reno Mustache, who you all recall is now the head of the regional planning for inclusion into the MCR. But it's not our opinion anymore. This is going to be your policy.
Thank you. And one other question, if I could, Madam Chair. With regard to, I believe it was slide 19, you had mentioned that current industrial land owners could have EA overlay, and if they don't properly maintain their locations, that could grow. Do we currently, as a town, take inventory of those particular properties and communicate with landowners or monitor? No.
There's no policy. It really is the responsibility, in our opinion, since 2006, when they first imposed, for instance, provincially significant wetlands that the ministry and the province of Ontario should identify to the ratepayers, people paying provincial taxes, that your property has now been encumbered in some way. They have refused to do that. I think the town of Fort Erie has put it to them 5 or 6 times, and they just refused and say, if you want to do it as a municipality, you can't. But clearly, there are a lot of ratepayers that own property that do not understand that that property is encumbered by either ESWs, other encroachments like EC overlays, and they have no sense of what they should do to kind of exercise their rights to contain that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Petroni, I do have some questions in regards to your presentation. First off, it's good to see that on Site 5 you did note the potential of the Mid-Penn Corridor. I know that's up in the air. Has there been any forward movement on that, to your knowledge?
Through the chair, perhaps town planning staff would like to add to this, but to my knowledge, no, there hasn't been any change in direction from the province.
Okay, and in your assumptions, did you consider any of these industrial properties that would fit under a foreign trade zone designation or that would be better suited to be advertised globally to attract an employer?
Chair, we didn't do that. That wasn't within the scope of our work, but certainly based on the relationship, as I mentioned, to prime and plumbing areas in the new growth plan, if that stays in the new growth plan, virtually all of the land that will be added outside the urban boundary, either now through the regional MCR exercise or in the future through future MCR exercises, I think would be something that should be looked at for that designation. Basically, any large tracts of land that are within close proximity to the QEW interchanges, I think, would be something you'd want to look at for that designation for the...
thank you. And one last question. I would like to know, because there's a varying opinion on what shovel-ready industrial land means, and could you give us the definition in which it applied to this study?
So there wasn't a strict definition, but it certainly means much more than just being serviced. So what we did to get from serviced to shovel-ready industrial land was pose the question, if somebody came in with a site plan tomorrow, could they get a building permit? Okay. Assuming that obviously what was proposed met the official plan and zoning bylaw. So if they have to go in and extend services, or they have to go and open a roadway, or if the lot is too small, if it's less than 1 hectare, chances of it being used for industrial are slim to none. If it's too close to a residential area, the odds are very poor that it will be used for industrial. So we basically took all of those out and said, if the site had to be filled, for example, right? to bring it up to grade, that type of thing. It's not immediately shovel ready. And so that's how we got from the service to the shovel ready. I think, you know, and I will add, even if you set that aside and you just look at serviced, you've got an issue. If you go back, you know, and look at all the land in EC, you've got an issue. It's a trickle down effect.
Thank you very much. I come from the private sector, so having a good understanding of what you determine is shovel ready, coming from the private sector, if I had a big old bag of money and I rolled up here and had a plan on building a factory or industry or something, I would want to know that every dollar in delay, you know, meant real money out of my pocket as opposed to me getting the process moving to build a factory or to begin making my widgets, whatever I was producing. So it's good to know that you use that definition, that business people, when we assess the land, we assess it based on the viability of getting their business up and running quickly. Just some last comments, Madam Chair, if I may. There was one thing that I found of particular interest that I've noted. My clients, the company I work for, I do a significant business in Southwest Ontario from downtown Toronto all the way to Windsor. And the thing that you noted was the outflow of people moving. And I've noticed a significant shift in the workforce that works for me. I have over 17 client locations, over 15 different clients. And I noticed that my workforce that used to reside in Burlington, Oakville area has now moved to Hamilton, moving to Grimsby and further out. And a lot of that comes from the housing pressure. So I know that just talking to – I actually have a manager that's transferring from downtown Toronto to a new site location in Burlington. It's on the border of Burlington, Oakville, because it's actually closer to where he's moved now because he's had to move to Hamilton as he's started has a young family. So I thought that was a key and important point that you had brought out in your presentation. And thank you very much. A lot of information, a lot of good information there. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for your presentation tonight. I think it gives everybody a clear understanding of where we're at and where we need to go. And having said that, looking and reading as much as I haven't read it all yet, but as much as I have, I'm seeing that we're being advised as to how much is there, and then we advise of the potential that's there. But I think maybe is the next plan or the next step in this to develop a strategy in itself as to how we either gain control of property that you've identified or how we communicate with the owners so that we're both on board. Because when we look, let's just go to slide 22. You talked about 501 hectares, 8 sites at 501 hectares for industrial use. The first thing that comes to my mind is the town of Fort Erie may not be able to afford this, but we can work with the property owner as to making sure that we're both on the same page. Is that the next stage you think that we need to go to, and maybe and is that something that you would do for us?
Through the chair, so I'll break that question down into a couple of answers. The first part of it is that we have identified a priority ordering of that 501 hectares, and certainly it's going to depend on how much the region adds to the urban boundary. So is it just site 5, or is it going to be site 5 and site 2 and 3? So that's once that discussion is had with the region and that comes out, then certainly, yes, the EDTC and the town would have to approach those owners and determine if they're interested in selling. But I should, the second part of my answer should make it very clear that nowhere in this document does it suggest that the town should own all of the land, industrial land, and offer it up for sale. What's needed is a more prominent role for the town, because you simply cannot, if you say, hey, we want to attract high employment density per net hectare type of industrial employers, you can't control what the private sector does. As was mentioned, if somebody wants to put a warehouse that employs 2 people and it's 200,000 square feet, there's nothing the town can do about that. However, you can control what types of employment uses you allow on lands that you own. So it's a combined strategy, right? And that is something that, yes, I could work with the ETC to, once we get a little farther down the road, and if the region doesn't add any industrial land to the urban boundary, then it's a moot point, right? But that's something I certainly could assist with, yes.
Yes, I think more over where I was coming from was, I'm a little reluctant to say to somebody, well, we're going to come to your property, we're going to service your property, and we're going to create a shovel-ready piece of property. And then they decide it's private property. They can do what they want, whether they change their minds. Well, you know, we decide we're going to do something else with it. So that's something that I'd be a little reluctant to do unless I had something in place where it's like, okay, we can service your land. We can do what we can to make your land marketable. But we need some guarantee that when it's marketable, it'll be marketable for industrial uses and for employment growth. Have you worked with any other municipalities that have been in this situation and have made those types of agreements, or do you know of anything like that?
Not in this particular situation, because you're right on the cusp of, you know, finding out from the region over the next probably 6 months to a year whether or not they're going to add land to the urban boundary. So the evaluation framework that we've developed here has been shared with Reno Mistachi at the region. And his initial impressions of it, as you relate to me, was that it was a valuable tool, not just for the town of Fort Erie, but potentially for other local municipalities in Niagara. So part of determining which lands perhaps the town wants to acquire, if there is an urban boundary expansion, or even the lands that are within the urban boundary, that evaluation framework can be used as a guide to make those decisions. But we didn't get into the absolute details and particulars of that land acquisition and servicing program, because that's something that definitely would be the next step. I think the hurdle is for the town to sort of agree that that's something we want to do and we need to put resources behind it.
So, Mr. Mayor and Madam Chair, Councillor Lubberts, we deal at the EDC with private sector all the time. You've had no industrial land forever, since I got here. And so the only reason that we're creating jobs is because we work every day with the private sector and private landowners. So yes, we have a lot of experience in this, and this is why we continue to look at how is it possible we don't have municipal industrial land, and why aren't we selling what we do have? Well, we have sold it. We've sold 90% of it. It's just that we don't have any variety anymore. And so there's got to be this balance between working with the private sector and working with and actually purchasing some land. However, when we start to look at what's left, we still have a lot of work before, you know, in the next phase of this, before the region ever dictates it. Currently, we have identified, you know, our prime site, the second prime site, third prime site. But there's a whole lot that we haven't spoken about shovel ready. Archaeology is one of them. So it's one thing to go out and spend $3,000 to do a phase one just to find out you're now going to have to spend a lot more on a phase two. That's going to take a lot more time. And if you get to a phase three on a piece of property, it could take several years. That's not shovel ready. So we need to make certain that as we've triaged these sites that we've looked at as a technical advisory committee are based on the best opportunity for servicing efficiently, the best site that's located nearest the road, and the best site that's marketable. So all three of those things go out the window if we all of a sudden find some golden Tibetan falcon decided to lay some eggs there that day, because it's going to take us at least a year to determine if that falcon is going to live there forever or is going to fly away again back to Tibet. So there's things like reptile studies. There are things like bats. There are things like flying squirrels. There are precious little plants. We haven't seen any of that. One of the things that we have managed to do is, for the most part, these prime lands are agricultural. And they're not the best agricultural lands in the world, but they are zoned agricultural. That means the sites are disturbed, probably down to 2 feet. That means that they've been disturbed for a very long time, because these farms are very old. So likely we're not going to end up with too much of archaeology site. We also know that as they're maintained as farms, and they're plowed under, they're not going to be sites for strange little animals that are rare or rare plants. The question is, if they can't make a living on them as farms and they let them go fallow, by the time we move to them, they may well be hosts of some extraordinarily rare plant or some protected species. So we've really got to move, because if we just go up and tell them, look, we need 80 hectares right now and here's the prime site, we've not assessed that site for those types of things. And if the region then approves it and we find out that it's going to take 3 years, there's another 3 years before we even service it. So we need to have a variety of sites, and we have to decide before we even purchase land. Good point. Let's let the EDC talk to the landowners. Let's work out a strategy with the town staff. Let's make certain we know what we're saying to these people, and we may have to invest in doing some of those studies. And so at that point in time, we would need an agreement with the landowner that if we're going to make public sector money available to work on their projects, that in fact we do have an agreement with them that if we can sell the property, we have a price, and they will in fact do that.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate that. And I understand that, you know, whenever you deal with one piece of property, there's something that might come up. But, you know, I don't know that we can deal with that here today, because we don't know what that something might be. But you did mention in your presentation, slide 9, about the EC overlays. And I know that Environmental Advisory Committee, when it comes to EC overlays, would deal with that. And EC overlays, if I could be corrected by staff, but from what I understand, that's something that Environmental Advisory Committee can deal with. We can remove an EC overlay from a piece of property. So my question is the properties that you're saying have EC designation, is it just an EC overlay designation that's there, or are there other restraints that have to be dealt with NPCA or M&R? Has it been broken down, or is it just an environmental concern on these properties?
These are properties that are either entirely or partially covered by the EC overlay. So if we look at this graphic, there are 13 properties totaling 84 hectares that fall into that category. So all we're recommending is that, I mean, we're not sort of doing anything untoward here. What we're recommending is that rather than looking at each property every time somebody wants to develop part or all of that portion of the property that's EC overlay, is to do an area-wide environmental impact statement.
Yes. Okay.
And that would prevent, you know, that would save every time somebody comes in on one of these properties and wants to do a manufacturing plant or warehouse or whatever the industrial use is, them having to do an EIS. So then the committee could say, yeah, we've got the area-wide EIS. It applies to this property. You're fine.
Yes. And just to piggyback on that comment, that's something that I did bring up with EAC about a year ago. We were down at Thunder Bay, and we had to remove an EC overlay on a piece of property. Guy wanted to build a house. And I said, well, it goes for another 5 lots. Why don't we do the whole 5 lots? We know what's there. We know it's an EC overlay. We know what the problem is. We know that we're probably going to come here and say, yes, we can remove the EC overlay on all of them. And so instead of going to one each time something comes up, let's do the whole thing. And I'm thinking maybe that might be the strategy that we can go through with the Environmental Advisory Committee, and hopefully staff is making notes and we can get some of this property and looked at. If it's an EC overlay, then EAC can deal with it. But if it's anything that has to be dealt with NPCA or M&R, then they'll have to deal with it themselves. But
now, these were just EC overlay properties. And the other thing that the evaluation we did uncovered was that of the 13 properties, not all of them are really good industrial land anyways. So if you're going to do that evaluation, you might want to focus more so on the properties that scored higher. Notwithstanding, you'd want to assess all the properties, but If there's a prioritization in that study, you'd want to focus on the properties that scored higher for industrial use.
Yes, and I guess my question, too, is now that 84 acres, that was just an EC overlay.
It was correct.
Nothing else. So that's something that we could probably act on now.
That's right. It was just EC overlay lands.
Okay, thank you.
More questions, Councillor Lubert?
No, that's good. Thanks.
Okay, any other comments or questions from members? Your Worship?
Thank you very much. I just wanted to ask whether, I don't know whether it's on the next slide, shows the first map, maybe the next one. Is there any land there that is zoned industrial, is serviced, but was taken out of the inventory through your processes because it was too close to residential areas?
If there was, it was one or two properties and they're nominal, like they're very, very small. I would have to actually go through the list.
I'm thinking that F2 down near the right-hand corner?
All the Fs happen to be Nordic lands, now CMP1.
Right.
And so the F1, 2, 3, 4 is actually the information center. It doesn't show up there.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just wondering if Mr. Piccioni can comment on F2, if that's a serviced parcel.
It's fully serviced, yes.
So that's been taken out of the inventory because it's too close to residential?
Recommending that it will never be industrial application.
So if, just bear with me for a moment. You're the planner, Mr. Piccioni.
Yes.
Somebody comes forward next week with a plan to put something of an industrial nature on that parcel. They could put it up there if it fits the zoning.
If I'm not mistaken, that parcel is zoned UEC, Urban Entertainment Center. Okay. So that, and the reason we took it out was because it was across the street from existing residential development. And we felt it was much better suited for non-industrial use. But moreover, it's planned for hotel and retail services development at this time.
So I get that. And that kind of gets me to my second question, if I may, Madam Chair, this time around. And that is, the region, I believe, draws a distinction between employment lands on the one hand and industrial lands on the other. Are we going to be caught when we go to the region looking for opportunities to expand the urban boundary for industrial land purposes? Are we going to be caught on their inclusive nature of the definition employment lands, in your view?
The issue right now is that those lands, although they are urban UEC, still designated industrial land. And the real question is, should they be designated industrial land? Are permitted and promoted there are really not industrial uses.
So this comes under these properties come under the category of the municipality needing to decide to rezone certain lands either in and of themselves to get them out of the inventory or utilize them as the means to swap for lands outside the urban boundary that are more conducive to industrial use.
I think it's a real question for your Planning and Development Services Department, but if it's clear those lands are never going to be used for traditional industrial uses, in terms of the other three zoning categories for industrial land, it's a special category. It's not a lot of land, but I think it's about 35, 40 hectares, something like that. So should it be put into another designation that's non-industrial? Now, that would, on the flip side, that would impact the supply-demand analysis for that type of industrial land. So if it's population-related employment lands and it's 35 hectares and you're going to de-designate it industrial, then that's taking away 35 hectares from that supply, and it's adding it to the industrial. So I think it's more a question in terms of, is it appropriate to do that? But I get your point. It's definitely valid.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Just to follow up on that, those particular properties, well, what's happened over time is that the use of the property along with the 40 racetrack. Well handled by the planning staff of the town. They have literally allowed that to become, under the uses, it can industrially can take in a lot of different uses. It was tied to the industrial land inventory because it could really, as we got into this, it was pretty clear. Highway commercial, it's one of the most important sites on the QEW. Not really meant for conducive.
That's fine. My questions were more or less directed at the issues that may arise when we deal with the region, because they're going to be looking for ways, I think, depending on the pressure they get from the communities in the northwest, they're going to be looking at ways not to permit other communities to expand their urban boundaries. And it's helpful for us to know all of the reasons why recommendations are being made and what the pitfalls are so that we can at least then try to address those issues. I mean, the urban entertainment designation, I think, also applies to D4.
Which applies to, if I may, D4. D6 and F1 through F5.
Right. So that, and the other pretzel-defying exercise will be to suggest why some that are designated one way should come out and others designated the same way should stay in. But I'm sure that Councillor Nutt will help me with that feat. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tiber and Mr. Piccioni, for a really great presentation. I agree with Councillor Zanko. It was very well delivered. Next on our presentation is Ian Dant, partner, and Melissa Kosterman, who is the project manager for Dillon Consulting Limited, and they are going to be speaking with respect to an update on Crystal Ridge Park Master Plan. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Madam Chair, Your Worship, and Council. First of all, I just wanted to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to present to you our updated master plan for Crystal Ridge Park. As you said, my colleague Ian Dance and I are here to present to you our findings and the updated plan and the process that went into it. First of all, I wanted to touch on the 2010 plan. This was also done by Dillon Consulting back in 2010, and it was approved by Council in April on the 6th in 2010. One thing to note about this particular plan, the driver behind the layout was the fact that there was a need for two sports fields. So the layout of this particular plan was driven by that fact, and the remaining elements were put in place where they could fit and so that it could also flow with the design. Going forward, not a whole lot in terms of what is included in the master plan has changed. The layout has shifted slightly due to changes that we've received from stakeholder feedback and direction from staff. A quick summary of the public consultation process. We got in contact with the stakeholders that were met with back in 2010, just to refresh and get a take on what the current needs are, because it has been quite some time since this plan has been approved. We wanted to make sure that it is a current reflection of the needs of the folks in Crystal Beach and for Fort Erie, as this is a larger park with a larger draw. We met with 13 stakeholder organizations. We followed up with three who were unable to attend, so we telephoned them. We had one public open house, which had over 70 people in attendance, which was quite impressive. Before that, we had, in the same day, we had a community focus group meeting, and we had an online forum through PlaceSpeak, as well as the multitude of social media outlets that the town has at its disposal. We had over 29 respondents from that as well, totaling over 100 inputs from the town of Fort Erie, which is quite a lot. So what did we hear? What we heard is there isn't a demand for two fields anymore. What could be provided to the community for this park is really one multi-purpose field that could still house the football, the soccer, and other sports and passive play. There was a large demand for a dog park, a fenced, controlled area for dogs. Sun shelters, as this is an open area with an existing water play. Washrooms. Connection to the Woodland Trail, which is in existence, through an unopened road allowance at Thunder Bay Road. Spreading out the previously proposed adult exercise equipment instead of having it concentrated in one area, to have it spread along the walking path to make it a bit more of an active circuit. The introduction of pickleball courts, which is a fast increasing sport. It's on the rise. It's very, very popular and can only go further from here. And there were some concerns about parking being affected, and there was mention of having a water bottle filling station for those using the sports fields and the playgrounds, as well as those passively using the park. So we took all of this information and we synthesized it into some guiding principles, which later on formed our updated master plan. And to continue on with the principles, I call upon Ian Dance. Thank you.
I'm very pleased today to present the master plan for Crystal Ridge Park. It's certainly been an interesting process with a lot of input, and I think we have at this point a very strong design for a community park, and will be certainly an amenity within in association with the community center. Let me go here. Just that one. So I want to start with a number of key principles that drive the design, and you'll see as I get to the plan in a moment. But there are a couple items here that we felt were extremely important. One was the increased visibility of the park and the park from the street. Being behind the community center, it's something where a lot of the open space is hidden, and that all of the different elements of the design really needed to support strong views to elements within the park and keep views open as well. So that was certainly one of the key approaches. Improved trail connections. Again, access to the park currently is through the parking lot. You have to walk across that asphalt zone to get to the open space. So you'll see a number of key connections that are proposed. Passive circulation. In the 2010 master plan, a lot of it was active recreation, not an awful lot of walkway systems. And we're hearing that, certainly from the community feedback, that the ability to walk, stroll, enjoy a park in a passive recreation approach is something that's extremely important. So you'll see a number of different walkway systems that are continuous throughout the park. Mixing both active and passive recreation, creating a community place. There are a number of different recreational components in this park. A lot of them are clustered in one location so that they create a sense of place, a destination within the park, and that's part of it as well.
as mentioned, the reduction of the second field had really freed up a lot of space so that we could design a park that was a little more interesting, had a little more flexibility in the open space that makes the park a lot more interesting. If you look at the 2010 plan, it's very rigid, very orthogonal, and everything squeezed in. Now we have a little bit more room, and I think the park really benefits, and the design benefits from that. And we have an overall increase in parking. We have 54 spaces, 11 of them handicap spaces, so that's a significant increase between one expansion of a parking area and one new parking lot as well. So those are the principles. I would like to just run through the plan and give you really a tour through the site. This is the overall plan. I'll zoom into each of the different areas. You have Ridge Road on the right-hand side, Rebstock at the bottom, the south end. And I guess the one thing to take from this plan, as it's all linked together, is that, and it's a bit tough to see, but all of the walkways are a continuous system that run throughout the entire park. You can run at the woodlot at the top. It will link up to the Thunder Bay access point, and it will link through the entire park through to Rebstock Road on the south end as well as links out to Ridge Road, so that there's pedestrian access throughout the entire park. So the south end of the park, from Rebstock Road running northward, the one of the first components is a parking lot. The existing granular lot would be a paved lot. It accommodates vehicular traffic parking to that south end, which currently really has no access into the site. Thank you. And then starting at the sidewalk, there's a pedestrian park entrance and signage that would go with that. That trail would extend northward. You can see a meandering curvilinear trail running through the landscape. Either side of that trail are two areas that are in lighter green shown here. The one on the right-hand side would be for small dogs off-leash, and on the left-hand side, large dogs off-leash. We heard from the public a lot of support and interest in having dogs off-leash areas within this park. In this location, it means that the parking area, you can drive, drop, and let the dogs out. You're right at the dogs off-leash location. Makes sense in terms of a functional point of view. Some landscape elements that there's planting both sides of the site adjacent to the properties, so that there's a screening of those properties. And then as we go a little bit to the north, and let me try and illustrate this a little bit better, but just in the north and the west side of the site there, you'll see a toboggan hill. Considering that to be a fairly shallow slope, given that the winters we have, it's more for little kids, and also we don't want an elevation that looks into the adjacent properties. So that's a very modest facility that we're contemplating in that location. On the right-hand side, as you walk northward along that curvilinear walk, we have in the blue four pickleball courts. They have a seating area. They have some shading with them as well. And as Melissa mentioned, it's pickleball is a growing sport. It's open to a number of different age groups and seems to be growing Southern Ontario. And in, heard again from the public, a lot of interest in having pickleball courts here. Some indoor ones currently are generally booked, so having four outdoor ones would be a real amenity. Just going to show you, if I can, that's the location right in that location is the area of the toboggan slope. The entire park is accessible. Gives opportunities for exercise stations along the walkway system as well. So we'll just go to the center area. And just Just to give you an illustration, pickleball courts, this gives you an indication for configuration. Somewhere between badminton and tennis in scale. So that gives you a sense of what they are. Small toboggan hill, again, the sliding hill, and the dogs off-leash area, small breeds and large breeds in separation. So the central area around the splash pad, so one of the key elements in the central area is the this is really the focus of the park. A number of different amenities located in this location. And you'll see kind of central in that space the existing water play with seating surrounding it. So that is a facility that's already been constructed. It sits really out in the middle of the landscape at this point, not too much around it. So we're really building a number of amenities in and around that water play facility. So that'll be part of this central area and kind of focus of the parkland. There are a number of different components in this area. In addition to the water play, there's seating areas surrounding that, and then there is a park pavilion. The park pavilion is visible from the street. It provides some shelter and picnic support as well. It's a key component of kind of the focus and that visibility from the street into the park amenities. The two blue areas show multi-use play courts, tennis, and ball hockey, basketball would be the typical items that are in that multi-purpose court area. And just to the left of those blue courts are children's play. That would be senior play just to the left of that, and just a little bit to the north is a winter outdoor skating zone. In the summer, it would be a lawn zone that would allow for warm-up for the soccer and the football. In the winter, it would be an area that would be allowed to flood and not deep, but when we have some reasonable weather, cold weather, would freeze and provide a natural skating surface, not refrigerated in any way, but certainly an amenity for a few weeks of the year, older. Some of the other elements in this, again, the walkway system that is running continuous through this location, linking to the south, linking to the north, and extending out to Ridge Road, the brown walkway that is indicating a link out to Ridge Road so that there's safe pedestrian access from Ridge Road right into the central area of the park. You'll notice there a potential link to the community center for potentially future washroom access into that part of the building. Or we've also shown, you'll see in the notes, potential future washrooms just to the right-hand side of the water play, and I'll get to that in a moment. One of the other key elements of this location is that the parking lot on the western edge of this parking area has been extended to create some additional spaces in that area. So that also brings the car drop-off and kind of access into this central area of the park a little bit closer. Instead of those elements being kind of out in the park, they're actually now engaged to the edge of that parking area, providing additional parking around the community center as well. And there is some additional lining that is happening, giving us some additional spaces as well. Just some samples of some of the different components. A tot lot that's included in that central area might be a small play structure such as that. And then for the senior children's playground, something that's more adventure related, more challenging, and for senior kids, and that would be part of that playground area. You'll recognize the park pavilion from Ridgeway. That type of structure we're thinking of that reflects the heritage and some of the character of Fort Erie and Crystal Ridge area. Certainly something that provides shading and an area for support for picnic. and then the outdoor natural skating area that we talked about as well, just for a few weeks of the year. Walkways, continuous walkways, those are asphalt routes, again, continuous throughout the site, with fitness stations, seating, waste receptacles as you move throughout the parkland. Ball hockey on the play courts, basketball, and multi-purpose courts. So we're now moving to the north end of the site. One of the key elements within that space is the multi-purpose field, very close to its existing location. It will include football, soccer, and accommodate lacrosse as well. We've heard from soccer, the soccer groups, that mini soccer is in a growth mode and that this can accommodate four mini fields as well as a senior, single senior soccer field as well. You'll notice that the walkway, pedestrian walkway meanders surrounding the field. It provides access to St. George School to the west and to a road easement to the west as well, so that it provides pedestrian connections to the community on that side. And as you go along the top, there will be links into the existing woodland. There's an existing park pavilion that we would like to include an interpretive component within that pavilion and reuse that existing structure. As we move along to the, just to the side, you'll see an adventure play space, and that is a natural component, natural elements in an adventure play zone. That tends to be more wooden components and things that kids can experiment and use in terms of a less formalized play space. And then just to the south of that slightly is a storytelling small amphitheater. The library requested an outdoor space and believe that there's a good combination connection between the library and having this outdoor classroom. One other component is that just from the north side of the community center, we've reorganized a few spaces to allow a walkway to continue from the entrance there over to the park and over to the fields. We have no decrease in parking spaces there, but have simply made room for that walkway to occur. This just gives you some examples of a nature adventure play or natural playground. Tends to have a number of different types of components in it, less of the kind of structured metal components that we typically see. A small classroom, outdoor seating area, small slope, small space, but useful for outdoor storytelling. And then the outdoor fitness equipment that would be located along the overall walkway trails. So moving to the north end of the site, the existing wood lot has an existing trail. We're proposing that that trail be upgraded so that it's safer and accessible. It currently is eroded over time. A lot of roots and debris along that route with the granular, proposing a granular addition just to make it safe. The red circles indicate that there are several different interpretive panels located throughout that location, throughout the trail experience. And at the north end, you'll see a link to Thunder Bay Road, the unopened road allowance. And that would provide pedestrian access back to Ridge Road and the sidewalk at that point. We believe that's important because it allows you an online access into the rail system. And at the south end, there are two outlet locations. This means that from a personal safety point of view, you can go into the wooded area, you can have access out at the top, and have access out to the south. You're not always forced to go in one entrance and come out that same entrance. So if you feel unsafe, there's some different routes that one can follow. And also it means that people can access from Ridge Road from the school to the north, can certainly come through that route. The kids can come through and access through the park on their way. Going to just put them up earlier, but that is some of the different components of that plan. The one picture illustrates kind of the existing conditions of part of the trail. Very scenic, but quite enclosed, and what you can't see there is a lot of roots that are in that surface. The second image shows a woodland walking trail, what we'd like it to be like, simple, granular, compacted granular. It would be fully AODA accessible, given this surface. And, certainly a little bit wider and, with a number of access routes would be, certainly a lot safer. And then the interpretive, signage, located that woodland area, and also within that existing structure that's in the park right now, where there would be a kind of source description of some of the natural elements in the park. A couple other items. I touched on the washrooms issue. There are a couple different options here. One is to look at portable toilets, an operational cost of about $1,000 a year. Possibility of enclosing portable toilets in some type of enclosure so that they're not as exposed and, from an aesthetic point of view, gives a bit of buffering. That's about a $25,000 cost to build that structure, and there's an operational cost annually. And then access to washrooms in Crystal Ridge Arena. We have estimated approximately 50,000. We've shown on the plan potential link from the trail south of the arena into that location. And then from a long-term perspective, possibly to construct as an addition to the arena, I mean, this is a major change along that, probably along the southern edge. There's also an opportunity to look at a modular precast washroom building, $150,000, or design and construct an independent new washroom building, $250,000, an estimate for that. In addition to those, we have some storage. Got to go back here. So we have storage for the Ridgeway Lions Club. Potential, there's an existing structure trailer on site at this point. What we're looking at is potentially a modular precast concrete, doesn't have any servicing. You can see some examples of that in this. And they would be or constructed as an addition to the arena. Again, like the washrooms, that's a significant addition to the building, or we could look at off-site rental storage. Well, there are a number of items there that would address the existing storage unit that's on-site. So that gives you a sense of the components that are in the updated master plan. Again, as we said earlier, a lot of these features were part of the 2010 plan, but because of the removal of the one sports field, it's given us an opportunity to free up some area and I think make a more interesting park that provides both active and passive recreation. Continuous access throughout as well, and some additional parking as well. So we would be open to any questions that you would have.
Thank you, Mr. Dance. That was a good presentation. Does any member of the council have any questions or comments? Councillor Lubritz?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment on slide 3. When the lady was up here earlier, she mentioned that there was 70 attendees at the open house, and that was pretty impressive. I've only been to a few open houses as a counselor, and I know I've been to some where there's like two or three, and I'm just wondering, I know 70 was a lot. What is the average? I'm thinking maybe 10 or 12, 15 is average. Is that right? I've seen some heads nodding yes and everything, yeah. I just want to give the audio or the people that are listening to the audio, right? And the I just want to give them a little perspective on 70 people coming to an open house is impressive, because the average, like you said, is about 10 or 12 or maybe 15. So, yeah, it was a good turnout. I was there, and a couple of the other counselors were there, and it was nice to see a lot of people come out. So obviously, there's a lot of interest in this park and the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Councillor Nutt and then Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just go to slide 7? In your, on this slide, and I know this is just a conceptual drawing, but I believe that, actually, if you could just go one more slide, maybe it was, yeah, there we go. So where you denote here small dog, large dogs, yes. In this conceptual drawing, I don't see, is the hash ticks around that fencing, or is that just to designate the area?
Yeah, it's intended that there is fencing. It's an enclosed dog off-leash zone, fencing surrounding the area to the right, to the east, is the small dog zone. It would have a gated access to it, and then the one on the west side of the walkway, again, large dogs, and again, fenced, enclosed, and gated.
Okay. I also noted that in other areas of the park, you had denoted that there's like a water fill station, and was there any thought given to placing a water fill station in close proximity to the dog park?
I think that's a good question. The part of the water fill location is because we have the water play in that area and water service already to that area. You know, certainly for dogs off leash, having a water, you know, spigot, water source at that location is, you know, I think a possibility that we could look at.
Okay, thank you. I know that the, Sugar Bowl has a fence in dog park. It's a high volume use there as well. Always see dogs there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because of the high number of responses, which is a good thing from the community open house, I know there's a significant portion of the appendices that is written comments received. And I wasn't able to get through all of them. Would you be able to summarize for me what the general nature of comments were from residents who are immediately surrounding the park?
Certainly. It was interesting because I think there was a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of interest in what was being proposed. Certainly interest in being able to bring children, grandchildren to this site and be able to use these facilities seemed to generate a lot of positive commentary. You know, I guess I've seen parks similar to this with existing residential edges where there's a lot of commentary about, I don't want to see that change, you know, my house. So I didn't really hear that commentary here. I thought things were extremely positive. We did hear that there's some concerns about a bit of drainage in this area, you know, sort of localized comments about local aspects of the site that we can address as we're going through a grading plan. And again, there was a lot of interest in the dogs off-leash park that, you know, with, I guess, currently a lot of dogs running loose through the entire park and, you know, creating some issues with that. So there's, I think, support and interest in having the contained controlled space and having that issue a little more resolved and by having these two areas. A lot of interest in the dogs off-leash area. The one other comment that I heard was to not have the driveway entrance opposite someone else's driveway, that they wanted to shift that along slightly. So we've moved that so that it's not aligned with a private driveway on the other side of the road. So, yeah, I was actually a bit surprised, but, you know, I think the comments were generally all positive. Deal with the drainage. We've shown planting along the edges of the park to provide some screening between the residential properties and the park.
Excellent.
That's what we heard.
I appreciate those comments, and I think given the topography of relatively, you know, flat surface, I think this is going to be much more safer for Councilor McDermott when he's out on his rollerblade than Sugar Bowl Park is currently. I get nervous when I see him out there sometimes. I like the fact that we have entrenched the parking lot at the southern boundary. I think that makes a lot of sense given the proximity to the off-leash dogs area, that people don't have to bring them in through other busier areas of the park. So I thank yourself and staff for ensuring that is included in the final master plan. And I'm looking forward to getting this going. I looked at the budgets, and to be honest with you, I was surprised that it wasn't more to come up with this. So I'm hoping that those figures will ring true, because I think this will be money well spent to service a huge part of the community, and I'm excited about it. So thank you for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your Worship?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for your presentation. I want to say that I've received, and maybe other councillors have as well, a number of positive comments about the process and about how well the presentation was made at the open houses, people that have been involved with the community focus group, some of the stakeholders. They felt that you were very receptive to all of the comments that you've made. And going through the sheets attached to our report, it's apparent that you've tried to encapsulate everything you've been asked within this, except the one suggestion that there be some golfing permitted, which I only raise that because I link it with the same person asked for pickleball, which I do have a question about. How much does it cost for a pickleball court?
Well, they're certainly smaller than the regular tennis courts, I think. $20,000 range per court, give or take the surface treatment and kind of the drainage and how it's constructed. But it's generally a small court, very similar to a tennis setup, but just a lot smaller net.
Yes, and you may have received far more comments than is reflected in the information contained in our report, but it looked like there were four people that suggested a pickleball court. There was one young person that suggested a skate park. And I somewhat get that, but the reason we have a local YMCA that has racquetball courts that are very seldom used now because I guess some people are doing pickleball. But 25 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, a lot of people played racquetball. So I'm just wondering how long this will last. And I know one of the documents I read was, is this just a fad? And you probably can't prognosticate on that. But I'm wondering whether we're going to be putting a fair bit of money into something that may turn out to be a fad. Is there any way that these proposed pickleball courts can be utilized for something as well?
Well, certainly a good question, maybe a tough question. I guess in terms of it being a fad, the one advantage it has is that it's a sport that allows older people, seniors, to participate. And, you know, as the population seems to be aging, it's something that can be picked up relatively easily, and you can play a reasonable game in a short period of time. I think you might have seen in our pictures, you know, it's an older crowd that's actually playing that sport, and that what we're seeing throughout southern Ontario anyway is that it seems to be growing in communities where it's an older population that seems to be there. So, you know, in some ways, if it's a fad, it is well supported by a different group of people that often, from a kind of sports point of view don't have facilities that are that they can use. So I think it supports a, you know, kind of a different group. So maybe from that point of view, it's not a short-lived fad. Maybe it's at least a little bit longer term. Can those courts be used for something else that, you know, if this is a short-term component? You know, certainly there are some different things that you can apply to an area where it has some paving, you know, whether it's picnic, group picnic tables. We are proposing a shelter canopy in this area, and that's something that in association with that might be an area where there's picnic surrounding it. You know, could you add asphalt to this and turn it into one big tennis court? Might be tough to do that, but I think I don't think it's short-lived in a couple of years. I think it's a longer term than that. And
we're
seeing in other communities that they're actually, you know, Hamilton, for instance, is building a new park, and they have something like 12 or 14 of the courts being proposed in this park. So there's certainly a lot of interest in other locations.
Remember lawn bowling?
Yeah.
We used to have magnificent lawn bowling courts here in Fort Erie at Oaks Park, actually, and very, very well used in a different time period, different time frame. I certainly don't want to interfere with what is an excellent, in my view, and I think the other counselors have expressed it, an excellent concept. I'm a little leery about pickleball because I'll be perfectly honest with you. I first heard the words pickleball probably a week ago, and I don't know if my colleagues are any more informed than I am. Councillor Lubritz, it may be because you're out and about a bit more than I am. Pardon? I don't think that was the context. So I'm just a little concerned about the possibility that we're going to spend $40,000 for two courts that may get used and may become very, very popular, and it's more likely that we can turn or utilize tennis courts as well for pickleball, but I'd hate to see those two little courts end up not being very well used because the people that are here aren't into pickleball, and then we've really got nothing that we can do with it. So I would ask that you at least think about that, whether there are some other uses that can be made with respect to that. The rest of this I'm very impressed with, as I've said, most of the people that I've spoken to have been very, very complimentary. I had one other concern, and that relates to the pedestrian link from the area of the Park Pavilion out to Ridge Road. And I'm just wondering whether that's, it looks like it's in the middle of the parking lot.
So it's designed in a raised curbed zone to be situated between the driveway routes along the south edge of the community center and the parking, which is south of that. It is defined by the curb. It's certainly there's circulation, full circulation surrounding the parking area south of that, and then full circulation you know, to the north of it. I guess we looked at bringing it between the parking lot, between the parking base as a center island, but that didn't really give us links back to the community center. We felt that direct view, it would also separate that raised boulevard, call it that, would separate the kind of utility and the traffic running along the edge of the building from the parking area to the south. So it looks and is in between the two. The intent was that it's about 2 meters wide and that it's raised so that at least it has some separation from grade for pedestrians. But, you know, our feeling is that it's really important to have that connection from Ridge Road back to the park areas as well. So
I absolutely agree with that. I'm just wondering whether it wouldn't be safer if it were perhaps along the southerly limit of the parking lot, as an example. I don't know. Aside from not being an expert in transportation, I'm not an expert in parks planning. It's just something that I noticed. And that was something that I thought that I would raise. And then the final question that I had, Madam Chair, if I might, is with respect to the washrooms, I know that some of the comments, people were complaining that it's too far to walk to the washrooms. I suppose they're going to complain that it's too far to walk to the water station. But the reality is there are some existing washroom facilities already without direct access from the outside. I know that I believe the Lions were concerned about continuous access to the washroom in the north part of their building. The library may feel the same way. The arena, I don't know, but I would hope that when we come to that solution, we'll be able to take advantage of existing facilities if possible. If not, well then, of course, this will be, I have no doubt, a very highly used facility in our community, and it should look good, and we will, I'm confident, make the investments necessary for it to be worthy of the use that it will get. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubritz?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Yeah, just to follow up a little bit on the pickleball courts and the mayor's comments about racquetball, and then from racquetball we move on to something else. I was there at the racquetball courts, and I didn't go after a while, and I could say that it was because of my back, my knees, and my reflexes, but it was because I got older and I couldn't do it anymore. And so I understand what you're saying about pickleball. If it runs out, the fad runs out. There's other things. But there's also maybe a bocce court after when I really can't do anything. I can go there and play some bocce. But I just, commenting on the washrooms, I'm wondering if you did look at anything with our park at Bay Beach, because we have a washroom facility there which was portable, and at that time I think it was we paid $37,000 or $47,000 to have that there. They're in pieces, and I'm wondering for short term if we could utilize, maybe when we do our master plan for Bay Beach, if we move that to Crystal Ridge Park and for a short-term solution. I don't know if that would work. Or
I can address that question. There's very high demand for that washroom facility. When it leaves Bay Beach, we have the Fort Erie Soccer Club also wanting to have access to it at Optimus Park for a change in shower and washroom. So there is high demand for that. I don't know where that building is going to end up. We will for sure be reusing it. It's just a matter of, I guess, which facility comes first. So
are we going to add this to the list, and then we'll have a draw or
yeah,
raffle?
Yeah, we can have
or,
a draw, sure.
Yeah, we could pay for it.
We could.
That sounds good to me, yeah. And then another comment just on
option.
The...
To answer your question, it is an option that we have considered on our list.
Okay, all right. And then the enthusiasm from the community. And I don't want to take any credit for this, but I don't know if you know this. I brought up a dumb idea a couple of years ago to build a school there, right? And so maybe that's why all the people in the neighborhood are so excited about seeing a park, because they don't have to put up with a school. So anyway, but not being serious here, it was good to see everybody come out. And I did get a lot of comments from a lot of the neighbors and a lot of friends. That's my ward down in that area, and they were very, very excited to see that they're going to get a dog park. So thank you very much.
Any further comments or questions from councillors? Seeing none, I just have one comment. Mr. Dance, I was at the Ridgeway Crystal Beach Library, and those 70 people were very enthusiastic, so I was really happy as well to see my constituents out there and enjoying it, and also Councillor Lubert's constituents. But oddly enough, there were other members of the public from the Greater Fort Erie area that weren't part of the ward system that were there as well, that were excited. And I did have probably about 30 people call me with respect to pickleball and why that wasn't on the online survey at the time, because they were waiting to choose that as one of the features. So it is quite popular right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
has older friends than we do.
Well, George.
George.
George's perspective.
All right, moving along to reports. That brings us to PDS-20-2017, Crystal Ridge Park Master Plan Update. The recommendation is that Council approve the update of the Crystal Ridge Park Master Plan based on feedback received through the community consultation process, and further that Council direct staff to identify a funding allocation for a washroom in Crystal Ridge Park in the 2018-10-year capital forecast, and further that Council direct staff to identify an allocation of $70,000 in the 2018 supplementary budget request for a building to replace the current shipping container used for storage by the Ridgeway Lions Club. Can I have a mover? Councillor Passero?
Can I put forward a motion that we deal with each of the items separately under the recommendations, noting the mayor's conflict?
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So that motion is on the floor. I'm going to call the question. Have that approved. All those in favor? Motion carried. So we'll deal with the first that. And Madam Clerk, do I have to have a mover for each that then?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So can I have a mover for the first of that, Councillor Passero, that Council approve the update of the Crystal Ridge Park Master Plan based on feedback received through the community consultation process. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That is unanimous. Carried. The second that, may I have a mover? Councillor Zanko, that Council direct staff to identify a funding allocation for a washroom in Crystal Ridge Park in the 2018-10-year capital forecast. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That is passed unanimously. And the third that, may I have a mover? Councillor Nutt, that Council direct staff to identify an allocation of $70,000 in the 2018 supplementary budget request for a building to replace the current shipping container used for storage by the Ridgeway Lions Club. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? That is unanimously carried. Moving on to report number PDS-21-2017, Award of Contract Consulting Services, Parks and Open Space Master Plan.
So moved.
Thank you, Your Worship. That recommendation is on the floor. Any comments or questions, Your Worship?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I had a question with respect to the timing of the RFP. It was issued on February the 16th, and submissions were to be received by March the 3rd. That's about a two-week time frame, and it seemed awfully short, but is that typical?
Ms. Hansen?
Madam Chair, that has been typical in the past. We have had discussions with our purchasing manager about trying to extend that, which we are going to strive to do. So 2 weeks has been typical in the past, but we're going to try to give more time in the future, just in general with tenders and proposals.
Well, I think that that's helpful because I don't think that 2 weeks is adequate. And when we do a two-week RFP and we end up with one submitter, I think that that's an indication that it's too tight, particularly when the other one didn't submit adequate material. So I would hope that in the future, it's not a matter of us trying to. If we determine to, we certainly can. So I would hope that we will do that in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hansen.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had the same concern as Mayor Redekop when I read through, and I'm just, if I could follow up on Ms. Hansen's answer. That's typical of what we do at the town of Fort Erie, and then is that typical then of what's happening elsewhere on the landscape, or are we rushing it and everybody else is taking much longer time?
It's not abnormal. I think it ranges from 2 to 3 weeks is probably typical.
Okay. So we're not
that
far out.
The industry, I guess, construction and consulting, they're very busy right now. There's a lot of work out there. And I think following up on my comment before, one of our strategies to try to attract more tender submissions and proposal submissions is to extend the deadline. So that's a challenge we're facing right now, not only with proposals, but tenders and requests for quotations, is we're getting a limited number of submissions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hansen.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That's unanimously carried. That brings us to PDS 22-2017, proposed amendment to the town's official plan and comprehensive zoning bylaw number 129-90, Bowen Road. Can I have a mover? Councillor McDermott? Any comments or questions with respect to this report? Your Worship?
I just had one question, and it related to an email that was received from somebody named Van Eyken, and I was just wondering whether the concerns expressed by that individual can be addressed. Not all of them. Some of them.
Mr. Brady?
Would it be possible to learn what the concerns were that were expressed?
Yeah, sorry. So there was some concern about destruction of habitat. I understand that if it's not environmentally protected, there is a chance that it will be cleared in the future. And then there was some concern about engine brakes, that type of thing, the noise from that. But that occurs now, I suppose.
The sites that we're dealing with are currently designated for development residential. Now they're going to be designated for development industrial. So the idea of having a new development sites is not there. And the noise that's associated with the trucks on the street are probably associated with the existing industrial operations.
So this will have no impact on that regardless?
No additional.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That is unanimously carried. That brings us to new business inquiries.
So moved.
Thank you, Your Worship. That Fort Erie Economic Development and Tourism Corporation Industrial Land Strategy, the recommendation is that Council receives and adopts in principle the Fort Erie Economic Development and Tourism Corporation Industrial Land Strategy final report and forwards it to the Region of Niagara for its consideration as part of the municipal comprehensive review that is currently underway, and further that Council refers the report to staff for further study and report. Any comments or questions? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I had a little trouble with this motion or this recommendation when I read it the other night. And when I'm reading this, I'm looking at the second that, and we're referring the report to staff for further study and report. So it looks like we're asking them to study it further and bring back a report. Yet we're approving it, and we're going to send it up to the region for approval. And I'm wondering if maybe we could eliminate the first that at this time and bring in the second that for now, and then after we hear from staff and get a report back from staff, then we can send it up to the region.
Your Worship, would you like to speak to that?
I would. The reason it's set up this way is for a number of reasons. The first is that it's important for us, if we agree with the content of the study, to adopt it in principle. In principle, because our staff hasn't had an opportunity to fully review it and provide us with recommendations as to how we would implement some of the recommendations that are contained in the report. So in principle, get it up to the region because they're working on their municipal comprehensive review now, and I think it's very important that we let them know what exactly it is that we have in mind in terms of our industrial land inventory as it exists and where we see the potential expansion. So we need to get it up there as soon as possible. We need to have our staff provide us with their recommendations with respect to the recommendations contained there and how we would actually implement them. If there's some other additional recommendations that our staff might have. So this has been discussed in terms of how we should move this forward, and this is what our staff is recommending, and I agree that this is an appropriate way for us to proceed. So it's not the wording. I read the second recommendation as well. It's not so much that there's going to be study anew. It's going to be they're going to be studying it, because remember, this has just been presented to the town, including our staff, final format. So they'll be looking at it, giving us the report as to how we move forward, other than getting it to the region.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. So approving this is still putting us in a position where we can comment and we can provide some more input. Because the reason I ask that is because, like you said, we've just got this report and I didn't have enough time to go through the whole thing. So I'm still going through it and going back and forth on it. So maybe, I mean, if that's going to still give us some opportunity to talk to staff about some of the things that were in there and maybe make some other changes, then that those changes would be brought up to the region.
It's
or
an adoption.
If we have some additional things to discuss.
An adoption in principle, and we're being given the advice of the consultant. And if our staff says, well, you know, maybe this one should be higher priority than another, that's up to us. And then we make whatever decisions we want. But that's why it's in principle.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That is unanimously passed. Is there any councillor that would like to bring up any new business or inquiries? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an inquiry to staff, and I don't know whether it would go to Mr. Brady or Mr. Walsh, but it's with regard to some vandalism that occurred at the Ferndale Buffalo Road Park. I'm just wondering what type of damage was occurred.
Mr. Brady, do you have the answer to that?
No, I don't. I'm not sure what both Mr. Walsh and I looked at each other and said, what vandalism? We'll look into that and we'll get back to you.
I think it's in reference to someone possibly driving on the soccer fields. So that would be good if someone could get back to me.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Any other inquiries? I do have one for Mr. Brady. Mr. Brady, there has been continual inquiries with respect to washrooms near the pavilion and Ridgeway off of the trail because people are using the area by the pavilion not discriminately. And seeing how the Dylan presentation mentioned that portable washrooms are available for $1,000 at a cost of $1,000 per year. I'm wondering if during the spring, summer, fall, we could have portable washrooms in that area so that people could use it while they're using the trails.
I take it that the issue is in association with the trail right beside the Civic Square?
Yes.
Okay. Again, Mr. Walsh and I have taken notice of that, and we'll provide a comment.
Thank you. Okay.
If I, there has been a porta potty there for the past couple of summers.
Yes, the Ridgeway BIA does pay for two of them, but not in that specific area. They haven't been allowed to put one there.
Yeah.
But we'll appreciate that report or that comment on that, Mr. Brady. Thank you. Any other comments? No? Then I will happily return this chair to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butlin. You did an excellent job with some very interesting reports. So that takes us then to infrastructure services, and I do believe it's Councillor Lubert's.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive.
Okay. Yeah, infrastructure services is now in session. We have no presentations or delegations. Our first report is IS-05-2017, Contracted Conventional Public Transit Services for the Town of Fort Erie Extension Agreement. I have a mover. Move by Councilor McDermott. Any comments or questions? Mayor Redicott.
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking that this report should also be deferred to April the 18th, I think it was the date, because this is, again, part of the transit picture. I have some questions with respect to our position relative to the extension of this contract for the full 3 years, and I've had an opportunity very briefly to chat with Mr. Lustig about this, but I think we need I think we should tie these two together. They're the same company. The same issues will arise, and I think that it wouldn't be prudent for us to move forward approving this one this evening when the other one is being put over for 3 weeks. So unless there's some overriding reason why we should deal with this now, and I don't think that there is because I believe that we're in the extension period in any event, I'm inclined to ask that this be deferred until April the 18th, but I won't do that until other councillors have an opportunity to speak if they wish. But I would like Mr. Cookett to advise us if there's a problem with.
Thank you, Mr. Cookett. Is there any problem with?
Through your chair to the mayor, no, there isn't. If we're going to defer the other, I would suggest we defer this one until the 18th as well.
Okay. So, any other comments or questions, Councilor Butler?
Thank you, Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh, I'm just wondering, why would we have a three-year extension on this? Do we not go to a tender process for something this big?
Through you, Mr. Chair, the contract that's in place has a provision in it for extending this contract for 3 years. Our intent is after the extension, if it's council's wish, is to retender at that time.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Councilor Pissarro?
Thank you, Councilor Liberts. Mr. Chair, I'm in agreement to hold off for the 3 weeks, given his worship's comments. It only makes sense, but I'm just hoping for somebody to expand upon one of the comments in the reports, and it's the solicitor's comment. And Mr. Lustig is behind me, and it says that the operator is not in breach of any terms of this agreement, nor been advised of the town's intent to retender. The town solicitor has advised that the town is now considered to be in the three-year extension term and is obliged to negotiate costs and terms as costs were not prescribed for the expansion within the original contract. Does that mean that any discussion as far as retendering is a moot point, and now we're just kind of getting the best bang for our buck going forward, or do we have other options?
Mr. Lustig?
Thank you. So the agreement that you have currently, which is dated September 14th, 2012, has two terms, potentially. An initial term, which was to run from October 1st, 2012, to September 30th, 2017, and then that was called the initial term. And then there was a second term that was referred to as the extended term. And that was a term to run from October 1st, which we haven't reached yet, until September 30th, 2020. And that's called the extended term. But there was a provision that said that this was not to take effect unless the town gives written notice of its intention not to extend the transit operating contractor no later than December 31st, 2016. So apparently that didn't occur by December 31st, 2016. So the present situation is that we are kind of locked into a situation where come October 1st, 2017, having not advised the contractor that we didn't intend to end that, that we are on a track to continue with this contractor. There is a provision in the agreement that allows us to cancel at any time. And so we could cancel
the contract for any reason upon giving 3 months' notice. So in answer to your question, by not having given the notice that was provided for in the second part of the term that I referred to, the extended term, we're on a track now to continue, but we can put an end to that by canceling the contract on 3 months' notice, which I don't think is something that the town staff is willing or wishing to recommend because of various reasons that I'm sure can be explained by OSHA.
Thank you, Mr. Lustig. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm still in favor of extending for 3 weeks because I think that will give us a better idea of what we're actually having them quote on. But for all the reasons in the reports, I think we'll be dancing with the partner who got us here. It's just a matter of what that dance is going to be and how much it's going to cost us. Thank you.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? Mayor Redicott?
If there aren't any, then I would move.
I'd just like to follow up on what Mr. Lustig said about the extended period and everything ending December 31st, 2016. Is that correct?
30th.
September 30th, 2017 was the initial term, but in essence, by not having advise the contractor that you didn't wish to end the contract at that time, contract will continue unless you cancel it.
I guess my question is, we're here to extend the contract, but we weren't part of the process when the extension period came about. And I'm just wondering, is there a reason why council isn't brought into the fold before we get into the extension period? Anybody?
To you, Chair. To be honest with you, it was an error on our part, on staff's part. I'm not going to try to hide it. We should have brought this before council back at the end of summer, made you aware of it. It was the end of the five-year with the three-year extension coming up, so we should have made you aware at that point. It slipped through the cracks. We didn't catch it until later after that date.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, I don't think there's a problem with it. I think we probably would have gave the extension anyway, but I was just curious as to why we weren't brought. Anyway, we'll move back to the report. Mayor Redicott, you'd like to?
I'd like to move that we defer deliberation on this report until the committee meeting of April the 18th, 2017.
That motion is on the floor. Any comments or questions on the timing? Seeing none, all those in favor? Unopposed, that's carried. That moves us to IS09-2017, award of tender for Highland Avenue reconstruction, contract number ISE17THIGH14. Moved by Councilor McDermott. Any comments or questions? Mayor Redicott.
Just with respect to the situation that we're in right now, where there's a reference to there now being an apparent increase in tender prices that are being received by municipalities across the region. And presumably that's just something that we've become aware of, as have other municipalities, over the last few weeks when tenders for 2017 have gone out. Is that correct?
Yes. Councillor Mr. Walsh, I think you addressed that last week, no?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair. That's about when it's come to our attention since the new year.
And is there any explanation for the fact that we've only received one bid on this? I know that it's Peters Excavating is a very reliable and reputable contractor. I don't have a problem with that. Is there some indication as to why there was only one tender for such a large project?
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Chair. I did some calling around following the tender close. I phoned a local contractor. They're extremely busy right now and couldn't take on the work, so they didn't want to put the town in a bad spot by being low tenderer and then telling us we could only get it done in starting in December or something like that. I phoned a couple of contractors out of St. Catharines that I've worked with in the past and have high regard for, and the same thing, it's just simply supply and demand right now. Their short answer is, why would they drive to Fort Erie when they can get all the work they need in St. Catharines? So
answer.
That's correct. They would not, because they have plenty of work right now close to home.
Thank you. If I might, Mr. Chair,
I think our CAO would like to comment on that as well.
I was just going
to
add one note briefly, is that on that particular day of closing, there was a few other major projects closing at other municipalities. So the contractors were in a bit of a bind, which ones they bid on. They don't want all the work. So what we've done is we're going to coordinate our efforts with the other municipalities as far as closing dates.
I think that's an excellent idea.
That might be a good idea. Thank you very much.
That's excellent. I commend the CAO on that. The final question that I had was with respect to comment on page five, bottom of page five, relative to the OCIF top-up grant program. I get a lot of mail, but I could have swore that we received something about this top-up grant. And I'm wondering if Mr. Jansen can comment on that.
Mr. Jansen?
Through the chair to the mayor, you may have received something from that. It's not clear at this point what the province has made publicly known with relation to the award of those grants. We're still waiting for confirmation from them to, and that's why you'll see it hasn't been included as an amendment with this project at this time.
Thank you. So it must have been something else that I was quite excited about that I took down to Mr. Jansen because I thought we had extra money. But I will look further into this. If we receive this top-up grant, will all of these monies be used to offset the costs of this particular project, or were we counting on some of this money to offset costs in another project or other projects?
Yes, you're correct. This was what was applied for was for this Highland project, so it would offset the amounts or the proportions that are identified there for the full $816,000.
Which improves our position then, I guess, Mr. Chair, in terms of picture with respect to what we've budgeted, what we didn't budget, what the variance is, and what have you. We're better off if we get this.
When the announcement comes, if we're successful, the reserve funding that was identified initially with the 2017 capital budget would be replaced with this funding. So we would see in our projections for those respective reserves an increase. So that would help us out in our longer term forecasts.
Because we haven't counted on this top-up grant money for this project.
That's correct.
Okay.
It was an application-based program, so we did not rely on it at budget time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That brings us to report IS-11-2017, notification of intent to award single source purchases. I have a mover. Councilor Passero. The report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That brings us to new business and inquiries. Any inquiries or any new business? Seeing none, we'll move to the business status report. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you very much, Councillor Lubberts. That takes us to Corporate and Community Services. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is now open. We have no presentations, delegations. There are no reports for tonight. Do any members of council have any new business or inquiries they'd like to make? Seeing none, I'll move on to the business status report. Any comments or questions regarding the business status report? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back to His Worship.
Well done, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you.
You were much briefer than the others. Any scheduling of meetings that councillors would like to advise us of? Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Your Worship. We have a strategic planning meeting for communications and customer service that is taking place here on Wednesday, March the 22nd, I believe that is, at 5:30 in Conference Room 1.
Thank you. Any other meetings, Councillor Nutt?
At the State of Fort Erie is tomorrow. Looking forward to hearing you speak.
What time? Yes, I should find out what time so that I could be appropriately late. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCop. Tomorrow here at Town Hall, Fort Erie Active Transportation Committee is meeting in Committee Room 1 at 5 p.m. And back here at Town Hall Thursday the 23rd, the Community Development Gaming Corporation is meeting in Committee Room 1 at 5 p.m.
And Councillor Lubberts and then Councillor McDermott.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Tomorrow evening, 5:30, we have a Communities in Bloom meeting in Conference Room 3. And Wednesday, we have a Dangerous Dog Appeal here in the Council Chambers at 6 o'clock.
You said Wednesday?
Yes, I believe it's Wednesday.
And Councillor McDermott.
Yes, tomorrow night at 5 o'clock, I have a Fort Erie Public Library Board meeting. And on Wednesday at 7 o'clock, just a reminder that an author that was spent a lot of time in the newspapers here in Fort Erie for the longest time, Michael Clarkson, will be at the library to talk about his new book with regards to daredevils and Niagara. And it should be great. He's been going throughout Ontario signing books, and he's going to bring in an actual daredevil that has been over the falls and chat about an honor that they want to bestow on the Hill family. So it's between 7 and 9 at the Centennial Library.
Thank you. Any others? Congratulations, Councillor Zanko. Councillor, yeah, that's right after this meeting. Councillor Nutt, motion to adjourn. Yes.
I don't know if Councillor Passero should have mentioned this, but on a Saturday we had a day of bowling. And,
I was going to do that then. And you don't have the results yet, do you? The official results?
Official, no.
Okay.
There's no official results. I just want to point out that Town Council lost its bet with Planning Department, who were very well represented at the Carroll's Lane. I don't know if we paid off that bet yet, but we certainly will on Friday. That's right. That's very true. We would just like to say they did a wonderful effort, and I would be very surprised if anybody ever beat what they did, and we're very proud of them.
Excellent. So, Councillor Nutt, back to you.
Thank you, Your Worship. The council and committee meeting for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 9:22 p.m.
Those in favor? That's carried.